Network. Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
This is Mike Malloy, and so here we are. 2 years have passed since a terrorist attack on U.S. soil left more than 3,000 people dead, U.S. citizens and citizens from dozens of other nations. During these 2 years, we and the world have waited for a full and factual investigation by the Bush administration on whose watch this horrific crime occurred. We continue to wait. Not only has the Bush administration failed to conduct an official inquiry into this massacre, it has also attempted, successfully so far, to impede, delay, and ultimately halt any attempt to unravel the awful truths of September 11, 2001. We must ask why this administration has worked so long and so hard to kill any search for the truth. We must ask why phone calls were made by the highest-ranking Bush administration officials, George Bush and Dick Cheney, to Democratic congressional leaders demanding that any investigation be conducted on nothing more than a superficial level. We must ask why the FBI was used by the Bush administration to intimidate Democratic members of Congress. These members had the temerity to suggest publicly that cooperation was not being provided by the country's intelligence-gathering organizations, that, in fact, Congress was even being denied the simplest information needed for its, at best, cursory and incomplete attempt to get to the truth of 911. We must ask why renegade FBI agents, in other words, agents who refused to participate in the code of silence imposed by Attorney General John Ashcroft, why those agents were reassigned, censured, or otherwise disciplined for attempting to expose the criminal incompetence of the U.S. security and intelligence communities under the control of the Bush administration. We must ask why investigations prior to the awful events of September 11th, investigations into potential terrorist acts such as flying jetliners into densely occupied office buildings, were stopped by the Bush administration. We must ask why the rulers of Saudi Arabia, business partners of the Bush family, and the chief exporters of militant Islam were declared by the Bush administration to be off limits in any comprehensive investigation into the financing of global terrorism of the sort that resulted in the destruction of the Twin Trade Towers in New York City on September 11, 2001. We must ask why members of the extended bin Laden family, also business partners of the Bush family, were allowed to leave the U.S. shortly after the bombing on 9/11, yet without being questioned by the FBI or other U.S. investigators. This was at a time when less important Arab speakers and people from the Middle East were being swept up in a law enforcement net spread across the U.S. and jailed. We must ask why the U.S. Air Defense System, a multi-billion-dollar system put in place specifically to guard against air attacks against us, had been ordered to stand down on September 11, 2001. We must ask why there was no response from the U.S. military when it became clear this nation was under attack. We must ask who issued those orders to stand down and why. We must ask why it was necessary immediately after 9/11 to pass federal legislation that, in effect, ended constitutional protections provided by the 1st, 4th, 5th, 8th, and 10th Amendments. We must ask why we were told by the highest law enforcement officer in the U.S., John Ashcroft, that any questions regarding these changes in domestic law by the public at large or members of Congress would be just short of an act of treason. We must ask why the Bush administration ordered an attack, both unlawful and against the demands of the global community, against two countries that provided not one of the bombers who committed mass murder in this country on September 11, 2001. We must ask why the country that did provide 15 of the 19 killers, Saudi Arabia, was spared the so-called shock and awe of U.S. military might. We must ask why Iraq, why Afghanistan. We must ask why the Bush administration, 2 years after that day of death and destruction, continues to participate in the covering up, the hiding, and the destruction of the facts regarding its failure of leadership that led directly to the awful events of September 11th. This failure of leadership, or worse, participation, active or passive, in the events leading to and following the attack on this country constitutes the greatest failure in this country's history. And if we are to consider this country, our country, to have even a minimal moral center, we must ask why the frustration, the pain, and yes, the agony of the families of those killed on September 11th, 2001, the sons and daughters, the wives and husbands, the mothers and fathers, why their pain does not register with nor matter to the Bush administration. I am reasonably certain that on the third anniversary of the awful and immoral and criminal events of September 11th, 2001, these questions still will not have been answered. I'm Mike Malloy.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. Doug Steffen here. It looks like we're having some minor technical problems here at the program. But please stick around. We've dispatched the whole Doug Steffen Good Day technical staff to get this thing fixed. I'm sure we'll be back with our regular show in just a few moments. While we're waiting, here's one of my favorites from the Doug Steffen Memory Vault.
Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, and boy, do I have an echo, Brian. If you can crank that down or something, it's very distracting. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're having a bit of a technical problem in the studio in Detroit, but welcome to the program, broadcasting live coast to coast and also on the Sirius Radio Satellite System and also on radiopower.org, IEAmericaRadio.com, and live365.com with archives at whiterosesociety.org. Barry Goldwater provided us with our quote for the day. Extremism in defense of liberty is no vice, and moderation in pursuit of justice is no virtue. Let me just start here with our Berlusconi alert. Silvio Berlusconi! Da-da-da! The president of Italy, or the prime minister of Italy, the man who, those of you who listen regularly will recall, the man who started out as a small-time crook, then became a small-time businessman, then started buying radio and television stations, then bought a network, then bought a second network, then built a third network, then bought a fourth network, and now owns 95% of the media in Italy. Newspapers, radio stations, television stations. The only network he doesn't own is the one owned by the government of Italy. And then, when he had all this media, in a true Rupert Murdoch fashion, Fox News fashion, decided to run for prime minister. Yes, indeed, folks, and he won. And today, actually it was yesterday, this is, you know, Italian time. Yesterday, he claimed Mussolini, here's the exact quote. First of all, let me just remind you, Benito Mussolini, the inventor of the word fascism, governed Italy from 1922 to 1943, and according to a general consensus between historians, caused the death of at least 1 million people. His citizens, after the war, Mussolini, his body was mutilated. It was just, you know, Mussolini was a bad guy. Everybody agrees with this. So what did Berlusconi, who is reinventing what would be the Italian equivalent of the Republican Party in Italy, reinventing it in the image of Mussolini as a fascistic party. What did Mussolini say? Berlusconi say yesterday? He said, and I quote, "That was a much more benign dictatorship. Mussolini did not murder anyone. Mussolini sent people on holiday to confine them." And all over Europe, here's this newspaper, the EU Observer. Mr. Berlusconi's claim has thus sparked a bitter reaction among Italian Jews and opposition politicians. And on it goes. So Berlusconi's response to the Italian magistrates, that is the Italian judges who reacted negatively to his response, he said they are, quote, mentally disturbed, end quote. So this kind of as an intro to the situation that we have here of the transition of politics, the translation of politics from a rational discussion into an irrational ideological course. Barry Goldwater back in his autobiography With No Apologies, which is a remarkable book, wrote, at no time during the campaign, this is the campaign of 64 against LBJ, or at any point in my public life, had I ever advocated or suggested the use of atomic weaponry, but the media said I did. Every time I saw that hideous LBJ TV commercial with a little girl, it saddened me to realize that all involved, the reporter, the spot writer, the producers, the advertising agency, and the candidate who was then the incumbent president of the United States, valued political victory more than personal honesty. Is history repeating itself? We have in the studio today, here in the People's Republic of Vermont, Mr. Michael Cudahy, who is the founder of Strategic Focus. His management and press relations responsibilities have ranged from the 1980 Reagan-Bush Midwestern presidential effort to the 1980 George Bush for President campaign, as well as the Andrew Carr Jr. gubernatorial campaign in Massachusetts, and he was the National Communications Director for the Republican Coalition for Choice. And Matthew, Michael, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Good afternoon, Tom. Thank you.
Hey, Michael. Tell us, you wrote this remarkable piece on this blog, greaterdemocracy.org, and it seemed to me that you were kind of mourning the loss of the Republican Party. You talked about the neoconservative takeover of the Republican Party. What's going on with the Republicans?
It's very sad to watch what has happened. In 1980, I had the pleasure to work for Bush 41 and watched what I think was probably the last truly civil Republican campaign. We went around New Hampshire, Iowa, Pennsylvania, the country, engaging in civilized policy discussions.
Now, this was the campaign that Bush lost to Reagan.
To President Reagan,
yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
It was a campaign based on policy and issues. We were not going out maligning people, trying to frighten people. It was an old-fashioned political campaign.
Yeah.
And since that time, through President Reagan, the Republican Party has changed a great deal. It has become it was hijacked by the neoconservative movement that emerged from the Robertson campaign.
Okay, let me just interrupt you there. First of all, my recollection of Bush in 80 when he was running against Reagan and he was warning people about voodoo economics. And
he was pro-choice.
He was pro-choice, right. And he was a very rational guy. And then when he ran for president several years later, he had become very different. And I think the whole country watched that change, although I'm not sure everybody really understood it all that well. You're suggesting that Pat Robertson had something to do with this?
Well, Pat Robertson was running for president in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And when that campaign failed, instead of going back to Virginia Beach, he took his mailing lists, he took his contributors, and made a very conscious effort to develop a neoconservative movement within the Republican Party. It was not an effort to become president and run against Reagan. It was an effort to change and overwhelm the structure of the Republican Party.
So Pat Robertson, in many ways, you're saying, is responsible for hijacking the Republican Party?
Indeed. He had some help, but he provided the political base, particularly in the South, for President Reagan. The Reagan Democrats, the neoconservative Republicans, all were emerged from the Christian Coalition and Robertson's help. And part of that was the development of an aspect of politics called wedge politics,
mm-hmm.
where you break the potential voters into small pieces, you scare the hell out of them, forgive me, and drive turnout down and bring people to the polls to vote against things as opposed to for things.
Right.
When we were working in, when I worked for President Bush in 1980, we were out campaigning for balanced budgets, respect, pro-choice for women, environment, issues that, that really right now sound almost like they would belong to a Democratic candidate.
Yeah. Well, we're speaking with Michael Cudahy of, what's your affiliation? GreaterDemocracy.org?
GreaterDemocracy.org,
yeah, is the website. Michael, the Republican Party, you know, the Democratic Party has a dark side and a light side, and I think, you know, most of us are familiar with what those are, and the Republican Party does, too. The traditional conservative values of balanced budgets and conserving the environment, and the Teddy Roosevelt Republicans and the Dwight Eisenhower Republicans and the Nelson Rockefeller Republicans. And then there's the other side. I mean, here's a quick clip here from Joe McCarthy talking about the duty of Republicans.
Our job as Americans and as Republicans is to dislodge the traitors from every place where they have been sent to do their traitorous work.
And, you know, devastating people's lives and people's... Do you see a return to this whole concept of the politics of fear and intimidation within the Republican Party?
A return to it?
Yeah.
I think the politics of fear and intimidation are the operative tools of the Republican Party these days. If you look at the previous Republican campaigns, you look at the way that the current administration is operating. The whole center of how they function is to scare the American voter, and to me that is not particularly constructive. As a pro-choice Republican, we're no longer welcome in the party, and there are millions of disenfranchised Republicans who do not recognize the party as it currently exists.
And so let me just interrupt you there, if I may. Do you see any candidates out there, either on the Republican or Democratic side, that you think that the Republicans like yourself, who feel disenfranchised and you know, dumped by the Republican Party, could support?
Ironically, there's only one candidate of the 10 people running for president at the moment who represents what to me is traditional Republican values, balanced budgets, respect for the environment, and that's Howard Dean.
Remarkable. 17 minutes after the hour, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. If you'd like to be on the program here with Michael Cudahy, a former Republican strategist and operative, worked on the George Bush Sr. campaign for president in 1980 and numerous other Republican campaigns, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Michael, tell me about what happened with Senator John McCain and this whole thing with George W. Bush in 2000 in South Carolina. You hear that referred to, but I don't think most people really know what happened.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because the McCain campaign is very similar to, I suppose, in some ways, what's going on with Howard Dean, in the sense that he got a big jump. He won New Hampshire. He scared the hell out of the Bush political machine. When they got to South Carolina, instead of dealing with him on a man-to-man basis, on a policy basis, just debating the issues that Senator McCain wanted to talk about, the Bush campaign began very covert push polling, which is known as calling people up in the middle of the night and making what has been demonstrated as despicable allegations about Senator McCain. Mm-hmm. And it was the kind of campaign I'm afraid we're going to be seeing as the presidential campaign moves forward. It's a campaign of fear. It's a campaign of has nothing to do with policy.
Yeah, my concern is that as Bush gets more and more in trouble, as things are not working well for him, things aren't going the way he wants, that you're going to see this flailing, because frankly, I think these guys have a lot to hide. The Cheney's meetings, the energy meetings early on, I mean, you know, Judicial Watch has now pried these documents out of the Cheney energy meetings where they were carving up Iraq before 9/11.
Right.
They were planning on, they were deciding which oil companies they were going to sell Iraq's oil to before 9/11.
Right. This is not an administration that has demonstrated an interest in what is best for the American people. Clearly it is an administration that is motivated by a very small percentage of the population in the country, the Halliburton oils. And they use traditional Republican terms to try and persuade people that they represent what is the traditional Republican positions,
right.
And they simply do not.
And they don't. This is Tom Hartman on the IU America Radio Network. We're talking with Michael Cudahy. If you'd like to call, 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Have you tried Maxwell House's freshest coffee ever? Today, Maxwell House, and only Maxwell House, comes with the unique Fresh Seal. Fresh Seal locks flavor and aroma in the coffee. To top it off, Maxwell House's easy open can lets you enjoy that fresh taste without a can opener. For freshness you can taste, choose Maxwell House. It's our freshest coffee ever, and a great way to make every day good to the last drop.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places, a ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Prepare to be astonished!
Okay, so just what is going on here, people?
Did you know that you can get the best of Progressive Talk Radio on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145?
Oh, really?
Well, that's remarkable.
Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145 is loaded with political talk radio from the other side.
Hurrah!
Kicking off your morning with Doug Steffens' Good Day from 5 a.m. till noon Eastern Time, followed by the Tom Hartman Show from noon to 3 p.m. Then get different perspectives from different show hosts on Radio Free Speed Zone from 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera then takes the reins from 5 p.m. till 7, followed by All American Talk Radio from 7 p.m. till 9. Then get ready to fire up your night with the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time, all live Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145, powered by the only progressive talk radio network, IE America Radio Network.
So what do you want, a medal?
Well, isn't that special?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
And welcome Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our quote for the day here from Barry Goldwater, where he said,
I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
And this got him a screaming standing ovation.
And let me remind you also that moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue.
But extremism in the pursuit of corporate profits, extremism in the pursuit of corporate donors, extremism in the pursuit of raw power, are these appropriate and practical things? I think not. And Michael Cudahy, who is with me also, I believe, shares that opinion. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Joe in Brookings, Oregon, is on the line. Joe, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program with Michael Cudahy.
Yeah, well, it's interesting you mentioned Howard Dean, because I was reading a website article in Progressive Review about the libertarians being for Howard Dean, and that the major candidates, Howard Dean, represented their values more than anyone else. And along those same lines, I mean, isn't it obvious the Republican Party is a lost cause? Why not try and build up the Libertarian Party instead?
Well, good question. Michael, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't think you want to give up the Republican Party. I think that would be a serious mistake. I think what you want to do is give up the people who are running the Republican Party at the moment. There are a great deal of millions of traditional Republicans out there who stand for many things that I would expect that you would agree with. Balanced budgets, protection of the environment, protecting a woman's freedom to choose. Those are traditional Republican points of view. The problem is that the neoconservative wing that has been in control of the party for the last 10 or 12 years has so morphed the party that it's become unrecognizable. What I would suggest to you is that we take them and throw them over the side and let the traditional Republicans back in, and I think everybody would be a great deal happier.
Yeah. Okay, so, Joe, thanks for your comments. Let's not get rid of the Republican Party altogether. You know, as I have come to fear and revile in some regards those who are running the Republican Party these days, I absolutely believe that the future of democracy in the United States and around the world to a large extent, particularly to the extent at which the world looks to us and uses us as the model, depends on our having at least two strong and vital parties. And hopefully, if we can get instant runoff voting, I don't think that we'll ever amend the Constitution to get proportional representation, but if we got IRV, multiple strong and healthy parties. But at the moment, I mean, we have this system that, Madison and friends put together in 1787 that was John Stuart Mill didn't invent proportional representation until 1841. And so we can only have, at the moment, two really functional parties, although, you know, God bless the other ones that are building up. But with instant runoff voting, we can bring them in, and we need to be doing that. But we have to keep our parties alive, these two parties. And when one goes on a jihad, I mean, the Republican Party has these guys who are running it, they're basically saying death to all Democrats. It's like, you know, it's the scorched earth policy.
And unfortunately, what has happened is that Democrats look at Republicans and they come up with a particular point of view. They assume that every Republican, if you have an R behind your name, you're going to behave like this current administration. And unfortunately, there are Republicans who look at Democrats and see if you have a D behind your name, then you're going to behave in some other particular way. That's nonsense. What we really need and what this country needs is to do what Teddy Roosevelt talked about in some of his correspondence at the turn of the century. And he talked about reinventing politics for the second 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
What we need to do is create politics for the third century for this country. And what that means is courageous innovation, bipartisan cooperation, understanding that Republicans and Democrats may not agree all the time, but that doesn't mean we have to be uncivil towards one another.
There you go. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. This is Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Show on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Michael Cudahy. Call in if you've got a question. We'll be right back after this break.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Hamilton.
And I'm Laura Miller. It took only a year and a half, but an Enron executive is finally going to jail. Former Enron treasurer Ben Gleason was sentenced to 5 years in a federal minimum security prison Wednesday for helping mastermind a series of fake transactions which inflated Enron's bottom line by billions of dollars. Gleason will also pay $1.4 million in penalties. While in prison, Gleason will put in seven-hour work days, either serving food in the cafeteria or doing landscape work. 18 other Enron executives face criminal charges. The next will go to trial in April. Meanwhile, former CEO Kenneth Lay and Chief Financial Officer Jeffrey Skilling, considered the linchpins in the Enron pyramid, have not yet been charged.
Angry protests outside meetings of the World Trade Organization in Cancun. Tens of thousands of farmers, environmentalists, and labor activists converged outside the WTO's fifth ministerial meeting in the resort town as riot police clashed with hundreds of protesters. Inside the meeting, the most heated debate centered around the United States' insistence that other countries accept genetically modified food grown in the U.S. U.S. Ag Secretary Ann Veneman.
We want to eliminate export subsidies, the most egregious form of trade distortion. We want to significantly expand market access. Our goal is to greatly reduce trade barriers that prevent trade and economic expansion.
But many countries find expanded trade in genetically modified food hard to swallow. Korean rice farmer Lee Kyung-hee took his own life in protest outside the WTO talks Wednesday, calling attention to the plight of South Korea's rice farmers who have been devastated by WTO policies.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to Animal Talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. And join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Positive? Yeah.
Cowboy, gunslinger, riding on the range. I'm right educated and I can't affect any change. Strange as it sounds to me.
Has the Republican Party been taken over? Have the body snatchers moved into the body politic of the Republican Party? Are they eating it alive? Is there going to be anything left when George W. is done with it? Or are we doomed, and is our democracy doomed, and are the Republicans going to take us down in flames? Or are the Democrats going to rise up, and we're going to have another 40 years of Democratic rule? If George W. goes down the same way Herbert Hoover did, and the next president, perhaps Howard Dean, perhaps somebody else, becomes the next president, if it's a Democrat, becomes the next Franklin Roosevelt. What are the possibilities here? What could be happening? We're talking with Michael Cudahy, who's a Republican strategist. His management and PR work stretches all the way back to the 1980 Reagan-Bush campaign. In 1980, he used to drive around the country with George Bush Sr.
and talk with him and take you actually took him to campaign stops and things.
We used to drive around New Hampshire together. That's where I learned my respect for Teddy Roosevelt. From President Bush was very respectful. Teddy Roosevelt was one of his great heroes, and there was a quote about daring mighty things, fighting in the arena, glorious triumphs. I don't have it precisely right, but it was better to fight and lose than to sit in the gray twilight and not participate.
Yeah.
And the simple fact of the matter is we are at a point with regards to the Republican Party where the millions of disenfranchised Republicans who all over this country have to say, this administration does not represent us. They do not speak for us. We're tired of it, and we want them gone. This is not a matter of, again, partisanship. It's a matter of what is right and wrong for this country. It is a matter of what is right and wrong for this party. And these people do not represent the traditional values of the Republican Party. They may use those words, but that's not who they are.
Folks, you know, there's a real problem when Republicans are coming to liberal talk radio to talk about the problems in the Republican Party. You know, it was Dante, I believe, who said that there's a special place in hell reserved for those who choose neutrality in times of crisis. And I am so pleased to see so many people getting energized and involved. And back before this last election, I remember, you know, just sitting around with some friends, and George Bush was way behind in the polls, and everybody was saying, this is Al Gore, it's a cakewalk. Clinton was popular. Gore, you know, kept his zipper up, so that, you know, that element is gone. And he, you know, it's a quack, quack, quack. And I'm saying, no, I think George Bush is going to win. And they're like, why? How can you say that? I said, because he's got more money. He's got the corporations behind it. Well, it turns out I was wrong. George Bush lost. But he did end up president of the United States. As Greg Palast says, it was like an auction. The guy with the most money won. Or the guy with the most money got it. You know, forget about the democracy. But
you're seeing a change in the whole process now. Yeah. Howard Dean is bringing in tools that the Republican Party does not understand.
Yeah.
When you see hundreds of thousands of people contributing $35, that's far more frightening. If I were sitting at the RNC, the Republican National Committee, if I were trying to figure out a way to oppose this particular type of movement, simply because every time somebody gives you $35, you've got their vote.
Yeah.
And as you organize, this is very refreshing. This is very encouraging.
Well, and this was the point that I was making to my friends who were horrified that George Bush was getting elected. Was because, you know, I mean, I'd done my homework. I had at least read a biography of him and knew what was going on in Texas and what he did in Texas. And I said, you know, this guy is going to be the Herbert Hoover of the 21st century. He is going to take the Republican Party down in flames. And it's going to be, you know, I think ultimately probably a good thing for the country because it's going to wake so many people up. Bill Clinton was doing so many things that I disagreed with, NAFTA, GATT, all these things. But you couldn't speak against him. On the left, you couldn't speak against him. People would say you were on the right. But we'll continue with that. We got a couple of callers here on the line. 1-800-TALK, yes, is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Ruth in Orlando, Florida, is on the line. Ruth, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program with Michael Cudahy.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Ruth.
Michael, I read your article the other day. I was really delighted to hear that you were on today because I loved your article and I loved what you had to say.
Thank you very much.
The other day, Tom, you had a quote from Eisenhower. Do you remember that?
You mean that I played a soundbite, or
yes,
was it a...
Yes, played a soundbite from a speech that Eisenhower gave. Do you remember that?
I do. In fact, I have it right here in front of me.
Oh, my God. I wish you would read it again. And Michael, I don't know. When I heard you do that quote, my one thought was, I would so love to hear Howard Dean get up and say that, because it embodied so many things that are not different from what Howard Dean is saying and reaches out and touches... I have a whole lot of Republican friends, and I feel really bad for them because they're starting to get a real shell-shocked look. You know, they thought in good faith that they could be good Republicans and support Bush, but most of these people are not right-wing Christians, and they're starting to look like deers on the highway with the headlights, you know, because this is...
You know what's going to happen, Ruth?
Huh?
It's going to start very slowly. And I'll mention a name that will mean something to you but may not mean anything to other people. You know who Bill McCollum is?
Yes.
He's running for U.S. Senate.
I live in Florida. I know Bill McCollum.
And he's a classic representation of the tradition of what the current administration stands for.
Yes. I mean, it's Tom Feeney. Yeah.
Well, it's important that folks like Bill McCollum not find their way back into politics.
Yes. Yeah, they need to be sent home. Have you guys ever heard of M. Scott Peck's book, People of the Lie?
Oh, yeah.
It
describes the situation. Now, Ruth, we've got a couple other callers.
We've
got to move along. But thanks for the call. I appreciate your comments. And I'll give you a little bit of that Eisenhower quote. I think I'm starting it in the right place. He was talking about how we never in the past had a military-industrial complex in America, and now we do as a result of World War II and the Cold War. And then he said,
establishment and a large arms industry
is
new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society.
And then he said,
in the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
Michael, I'd love to get your thoughts on that and engage you in a discussion about the traditional Republican value of getting in bed with big corporations. My perception, right? Mm-hmm. And on the other side, people would say, well, the Democrats get in bed with big labor unions, and we could have that out. But we've got three callers on the line, so hopefully we can get back to this. But let's get through these. Mike in Birmingham, Alabama. Mike, thanks for calling. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, thank you, Tom. And Michael, enjoyed hearing someone who's bringing a little sanity to your side of the aisle there. I've got a couple of questions. Number one, I read in the Birmingham News today where Wesley Clark is about to throw his hat into the ring. And I was wondering how the Bush camp would await something like that, how they would, if that was something that might, they may not really cozy up to, it would be kind of tough for them. And two, a second question I would like to ask is, why has the White House press corps just become a sounding board for the Bush administration, and what has happened to the Sam Donaldsons, the lady that
Bob
used to,
Woodwards.
Beg your pardon?
The Bob Woodwards. Where are the investigative reports?
Where are the probing questions? Regardless of who's there, whether it's a Democrat or Republican, why has the press become just a puppet?
Why is Helen Thomas standing on the outside looking in? Mike, thanks for the questions. What do you think, Michael?
Mike, I would suggest that not all the press have become puppets. I would suggest you have a look at Paul Krugman's op-ed piece in the New York Times today.
Well, that may be, but I'm talking about on a national scene. That's more or less, I recognize.
Yeah, and Krugman is not the press, by the way. He's a commentator.
We're just hearing one voice in the wilderness. Where are the NBC, the ones that are going across the nation, across the world?
Isn't this really about the politics of intimidation, Michael? Isn't this about this administration telling these people, if you make us look bad, we're going to cut your access, we're going to nail you to the wall?
Right. Absolutely. This administration is very disciplined with regards to its control of the media, particularly in the White House, and As Tom just said, it is all an issue of access. If you cause too much trouble, you find yourself in the back row with no access to anybody, and those that cooperate get the interviews. I'm disappointed that there are not more members of the White House press corps willing to stand up and fight, but perhaps as this administration begins to come apart, you will see some motivation for that to happen.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be something. It won't be rats jumping from a sinking ship. It'll be patriots emerging from the dust of battle. Maybe my metaphors are lousy here, but anyhow, 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. 1-800-825-5937. It is 16 minutes before the hour. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Michael Cudahy, a former Republican operative, campaign consultant, worked with a number of different different political campaigns over the years, including George Bush Sr.'s 1980 campaign. And Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, is on the line. Roy, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What's up, Roy?
Good morning. I've been really enjoying this conversation this morning because it's almost like it's describing myself. When I came out here to New Mexico in 1976, I registered Democrat only because that was the only way you had any input, because whoever won the Democratic primary won the general. The only Republican was Manny Lujan, and then at about that time, Pete Domenici. And other than that, the Republicans got trumped on everything except the governor spot. About the mid-90s, I said, to heck with this. I joined the Republican Party, and my statement to the state director was because these right-wings are taking over my party. I quit it.
So you're trying to take them back?
I can't take it back. I mean,
sure
the
can.
Precinct, the Sandoval County, I'm gone. I'm gone. I am back to, I went back and now I registered Democrat and I'm working Democrat. I'm going to work for people. I am sick and tired.
I don't want to discourage you from working for Dean.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny because Michael here, who has been a Republican his whole entire life, Michael Cudahy, just told me that he told all of us, I guess, that his personal thought is that Dean is a good candidate.
I mean, it really more and more, it's not a question of the letter behind your name, but the policies that you support. And
we had these right wingers, these Christian fundamentalist ideologues in the precincts in the county that I'm in, that you couldn't even debate them. I mean, you might as well not even show up to the thing because you were treated as like a skunk at a garden party.
Do you know what happens when they're? I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but
you know, and if you don't, if you can't work at the precinct level, where the hell are you going to work?
Well, when their power base is gone, when their president is gone, then a lot of those folks will be disempowered, and there will be an opportunity for traditional Republicans to take their party back.
And they'll just skunk away. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. Roy, thanks for the call and for your comments. I need to move along here. We got another call, and time is pressing on us. I wonder, though, to what extent that Pat Robertson organization that you talked about that formed in 1980 to take over the Republican Party has, how deeply are their tentacles, you know, the body snatchers?
They will not go quietly.
Yeah.
But it is a situation where if traditional Republicans who are out there in the millions demonstrate their unwillingness to go forward with the kind of tactics and language and policies that this administration has been putting forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Then things can change. Jim in New Mexico is on the line. He's called 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. And Jim, is that Grants, New Mexico?
Hey, yeah, I have two questions and maybe a comment. Number one. I hear a lot of talk about the Patriot II Act, and I know you guys are talking about something else, but it does affect maybe the politics of this nation. Where can one find the details of it? I hear a lot of talk about it, but I've never been able to read the details of it. Number two, the gentleman who's talking about taking back the party, the problem is with the Republican Party, it's been taken over by the big corporations because they finance all the campaigns. Now, the problem is, and then they became partners with the far right, like the religious right, et cetera. So the traditional Republican, hey, they want you in the party, but they don't want to hear one word from you.
Yeah.
And that's why their voices are being...
Let's get Michael's thoughts on this, Jim. We only have about a minute or so left, 2 minutes here left in the program. Jim, thanks for the call and thanks for your comment. Yeah. Number one, I would say, if you're looking if you're looking for Patriot II, you're going to find that Patriot II doesn't exist. There was a suggested, amendments to the Patriot Act. This Victory Act now has some pieces of it. Other pieces of it are popping up in other legislation, but there is not an official Patriot II. Michael, what about the situation? What Jim pointed out, this has been my concern with the Republican Party ever since Barry Goldwater's days, that this was, actually, back since Ulysses S. Grant. I mean, that was when, in my opinion, the Republican Party really got corrupted by corporate money and power.
The one thing I would say, and I keep going back to Governor Dean, but he has created an incredibly innovative model here, and that is if you can demonstrate that hundreds of thousands of people are willing to contribute $50, $100, that is far, far more powerful and far more influential than the $2,000 checks from the lobbyists from Monsanto. And it is a system that is going to have to be developed, but it is certainly something that scares the Republicans and can overwhelm the Republicans. If you can beat them with it one time, then you can beat them with it again.
So do you think it's possible that the Republicans are a one-trick pony that's basically take money from big corporations as much as you can, and that when the people get empowered and enthusiastic, say with Dean on the Democratic side, that there may be a Republican next time around who also does this, and boom, we're back to grassroots politics?
Absolutely.
So that actually is a very positive future, a very positive vision. Michael Cudahy with GreaterDemocracy.org, president of Strategic Focus Communications, also StrategicFocusCommunications.com, right, Michael?
Right.
Yeah, thank you very much for being on the program today. I really appreciate your joining us. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
I have a question for the men out there. What do you think your odds are of developing prostate problems? 1 in 1,000? 1 in 300? Actually, my doctor told me they're 1 in 3. But you can help beat those odds with One A Day Men's Health Formula. One A Day Men's is a complete multivitamin with 21 nutrients plus lycopene, which Harvard studies have linked to prostate health. So now that you know your risk, help beat the odds. Take One A Day Men's Health, the multivitamin with more for your health.
The Business Trip by Super 8 Motels.
Somewhere between the last meeting and home, between 4 drive-thrus and the blob of ketchup on your favorite tie, between 60 dead bugs on your windshield, an empty window squirter, and a wiper blade gone awry. Somewhere between where you are and where you're going, there's a Super 8. See you along the way.
Call 1-800-800-8000 or visit super8.com. All Super 8 motels are individually owned and operated.
Boy, I remember the good old days.
Yeah, when was that?
2003, of course, when interest rates were at historic lows and we knew the economy was turning around. What an historic opportunity. We really jumped on it. How'd you do?
Well,
we needed to expand our manufacturing and warehousing, so we called General Steel Corporation and ordered buildings engineered for our area and to meet our needs. And with the stucco and rock products provided by the General, our buildings look great.
How will you look back at this historic opportunity? Small business owners know that now is the best time to build that new warehouse, manufacturing, or retail space. Whether you need a 60 by 200-foot building for under $50,000 or a 100 by 175 for under $98,000, call toll-free 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need to expand your business, you need the General. If your church or school needs to build quickly and save money, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
See the look on Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending, I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her?
Right.
Boogieing.
Nancy can boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows when you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Show. According to Abbas, immediately after Bush promised to speak with Sharon about the siege on Arafat, Bush said, quote, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then God instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. When God specifically whispers in someone's ear, I want you to go kill those people, and they go ahead and kill somebody, what do we do with those folks? We arrest them, they are jailed, in some instances, executed. We immediately identify them as crazy. You know, Ashcroft is going to say,
wait a second, George. God has been talking to me. God told me. Not you. God told me. These people are crazy.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday, from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
They're coming to take me away.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Tom Hartman. Is it coming for some time? Is George Bush, George W. Bush, going to melt down the Republican Party? How much harm will be done to democracy at home and America's image abroad by the partisan plans that the conservatives and neoconservatives are rolling out for 04? It's already beginning. It's already beginning, and the politics of personal attack and the politics of positioning, Jim in New Mexico, the point that you made, and I really want to underline this because you raised the question, where is the press? I remember right after George W. Bush was installed as president of the United States, there was a little article in the newspaper, just a little, you know, one of these little 5-inch bits of AP stuff, and it was in the Burlington Free Press here locally, about how one of the vice presidents, one of the senior executives of CNN, had made a pilgrimage to Washington, D.C. to make sure that the Bush administration knew that CNN was no longer going to portray him in a way that made him look stupid or silly, but would clean him up and make him look good. And I thought, oh, my goodness, this is something new. 1-800-TALK, yes, Pablo in Santa Fe is on the line. Pablo, we've got 1 minute left. Your comment?
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
I'm great. What's up?
Yeah, wanted a brief comment about Bush and his ideologues there, Karl Rove, Cheney, Rumsfeld. It seems obvious that these people don't know. They're so focused on this particular ideology of domination, and that they basically don't know how to do anything else. And it's sort of like seeing something starting to come unglued that's just going to be spinning out of control. And
it's that one-trick pony of, number one, take money from corporations. Number two, whenever anything happens, say, 9/11, 9/11. No matter what it is, I mean, you know, tax cuts, 9/11, and they're trying to hold it all together with just raw force and threats and power, and I think it's going to bring them down. Pablo, thanks for your comment. I'm there with you, spot on. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our quote for the hour: extremism in defense of liberty is no vice, and moderation in pursuit of justice is no virtue. From Barry Goldwater. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities like Ted Nugent.
Everybody's got to learn to support hunting, fishing, and trapping, because that's where the dollars come from to save habitat.
You know, every time you get done talking, I feel like I should say amen.
But, because I live the truth. That's what my book, God, Guns, and Rock and Roll, it's on the New York Times bestseller list. It sounds like I'm bragging, because I am.
I love the book, Ted.
Thank you. It's like we're at a damn campfire, isn't it?
Animal Talk, Saturdays and Sundays on the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Two more U.S. troops have been killed and seven wounded during a raid in the Iraqi town of Ramadi. Today's fatalities happen in an area where loyalties to former President Saddam Hussein are still very strong. Those deaths follow a separate incident of violence just hours earlier, where two troops were wounded when their vehicle was hit by an explosive device. Meanwhile, U.S. troops have also apparently mistakenly killed at least eight Iraqi police officers at a checkpoint near the town of Fallujah. More from correspondent Laura Iyama.
Fallujah police were pursuing what they believed were bandits in a white BMW without license plates. As the chase neared a U.S. military checkpoint, the police say they turned around. American troops then opened fire upon the police and the suspects. One policeman says one of the police vehicles was an unmarked pickup truck with a machine gun on top, so that may have led to the shooting, but he says the police were shouting, "We are police," before driving off the road. Some hospital staff say their nearby building was hit by U.S. bullets and shells. Laura Iyama, Washington.
Also today, President Bush delivered a personal thank you to the Army's 3rd Infantry Division as troops returned from Iraq to Fort Stewart, Georgia. That story from correspondent Don Dornberg.
The 3rd Infantry Division has lost 42 soldiers in the war in Iraq, more than any other unit. President Bush presented troops with the Presidential Unit Citation, the highest honor a commander-in-chief can bestow. Bush reiterated that the war in Iraq is now the focal point in the war against terror.
Of the 55 most wanted former Iraqi leaders have been captured or killed. Matter of time for the rest of them.
The president called the war in Iraq one of the swiftest and most humane military campaigns in history. Don Dornberg reporting.
And thousands of Palestinians poured into the streets today in support of leader Yasser Arafat. They flocked to his headquarters in the West Bank town of Ramallah after Israel decided yesterday in principle to force him into exile. Israel calls Arafat a, quote, obstacle to the peace process.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Just because I look like... doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking... you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
Smallpox vaccines may provide a significant reduction in HIV infections, that at least according to preliminary findings released by George Mason University's National Center for Biodefense. And even though the findings are preliminary, scientists are optimistic the results could possibly lead to an HIV vaccine. August retail sales figures were strong, but still below what financial experts had anticipated. Retail sales last month were up 0.6%. Excluding the sales of motor vehicles and parts, demand for retail goods was actually up 0.7%, a figure in line with analysts' expectations.
Mom, see you later.
Jason, who else is going to the concert with you?
Anna and Kyle.
So you'll be home...
at 11.
Good. Make sure to call me if anything comes up, okay?
You know I never forget.
I know you don't. Now, about that music.
Yeah, isn't it awesome?
Well...
let your kids be who they are, but know what they're doing.
Talk, no, ask. Parents, the anti-drug. For more information, call 1-800-788-2800. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Former Iranian ambassador who had been arrested in connection with the bombing of a Jewish center in Argentina has now been freed on bail in London. Hadi Soleimanpour's extradition proceedings are now set to begin on September 19th. More on the story now from Middle East correspondent Roxana Saberi, who's in Tehran.
Hadi Soleimanpour was freed on $1.2 million bail after a judge said there was no clear evidence linking him to the 1994 bombing. The bombing in Buenos Aires killed 85 people. British prosecutors acting on behalf of Argentina had opposed bail, but a judge at London's High Court said Mr. Soleimanpour had known since March that Argentina might request his extradition, but did not try to leave Britain. He has been ordered to report daily to his local police station. Mr. Soleimanpour, who is now a graduate student in England, was arrested last month on accusations of conspiracy to murder. His arrest has increased tensions between London and Tehran, which has denied involvement in the bombing. Roxana Saberi, Tehran.
And I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Think of your favorite child. Now think of your favorite child again in your car. What can you do to ensure that child will live to become a favorite adult? When I come back, I'll tell you.
Okay, so you want one good reason to get LoJack installed in your car. Well, unfortunately, I can't give you that. But I can give you three. LoJack has a 90% recovery success rate. LoJack has helped recover over 100,000 vehicles worldwide. And LoJack is the only stolen vehicle recovery system used by the police. So if you still want just one good reason to get LoJack, that last one should do quite nicely. To find a dealer near you, visit LoJack.com and keep it close.
How do you protect your most precious cargo? Safety seats, which reduce infant death risk by 69% and toddler by 47%. Infant seats from birth to 1 year should be installed rear-facing in the back seat. These often convert to front-facing for toddlers under 4 years and 40 pounds. Booster seats are suitable for children 4 to 8, but not until a child is over 80 pounds and 8 years old are regular seat belts proper restraints. Whatever their age, when you think of your favorite children, picture them buckled up, then do it. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Extremism in defense of liberty is no vice, and moderation in pursuit of justice is no virtue. Time to wake up, America. Our country's been hijacked. We need to do something about it. We need to mobilize people politically. We need to awaken people. There's an election coming up in a year and a half, and so much can be done, so much needs to be done. And I tell you, the guys on Bush's side are moving so fast. We have two books out now that got wall-to-wall TV coverage over the weekend. Two books. Losing Bin Laden and Why America Slept by Gerald Posner. Gerald Posner's the guy who wrote Case Closed, the book that said, don't worry, the Warren Commission was right, the Arlen Specter who came up with the single bullet theory was correct. That bullet did pause in midair for 1.3 seconds before turning 90 degrees to the left. Everything was fine. No conspiracy. So now he's got a book out that basically says it was all Clinton's fault. And Richard Miniter with Losing Bin Laden. I mean, in fact, I think the subtitle is something like how Bill Clinton or whatever. You know, it's when the conservatives fail, as inevitably happens, because their policies don't make sense. When they fail, the first thing that they do is try to blame it on Democrats or somebody else. You know, I am predicting, by the way, that the neocons are going to be separated out and pointed at. They're going to become the fall guys. Wolfowitz, Pearl, Rumsfeld, maybe Cheney. Unlikely, because I think he's the real power behind the throne there in Washington, D.C. right now. He's the one who's really running the country and making the decisions, in my opinion. But certainly Pearl, Wolfowitz, and company, these guys are going to get nailed. But because the so-called conservatives, the so-called Republicans, these people who have hijacked this party, these extreme rightists who have hijacked the Republican Party and have hijacked most of talk radio in America, and look at the Washington Times, this newspaper, the Mooney newspaper, the Mooney Washington Times, owned by Reverend Moon, still has not made a profit. People say, oh, well, you know, you say, why is there so much right-wing media out there? Oh, it must be because people want it. Well, might it be because Reverend Moon has spent millions and millions of dollars, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars, to keep it alive? Oh, but people want to hear from these right-wing think tanks. Well, could it be that they're there because Richard Mellon Scaife has donated millions of dollars to the Heritage Foundation and other right-wing causes? Oh, but it's a marketplace of ideas. People want to watch Fox News. I think this is the first year that they've made a profit. For years they were losing money. Well, of course you do that when you start a new business. I'll give them that. But where's the other side of the argument? You know, historically in America, everybody understood, up until maybe the 50s or 60s, that there was no such thing as an unbiased news report. It's not possible. It's just not possible. I mean, you know, I worked as a news reporter for 7 years. I'm telling you, it is not possible to not have bias in the news. Anybody who tells you otherwise is a liar. The goal, of course, is to be as unbiased as possible. But just in selecting what makes the news and what doesn't make the news, that's the biggest. I mean, people are looking for bias like, did he say that guy was a right-wing nut or a left-wing nut? You know, that kind of bias, that's a joke. But it is impossible when you make, at the level of editorial decision, what gets on the air and what doesn't, for there not to be some kind of bias, because you have to have a worldview. You have to have some sort of filtering mechanism that says this is important and that's not. Now, the bias may or may not be political. Increasingly, the bias in news is this entertaining or not? I thought it was real interesting the other day. There were a couple of reporters who were discussing the Bush White House, and one of them, I forget the program, one of them pointed out that during the Clinton administration, whenever a soldier died overseas, Bill Clinton went to the funeral. And they were shown on TV. George Bush, even though he had time to take a month-long vacation, no president in the history of the 227-year history of the United States has taken as many vacations per year, as many days in vacation as has George W. Bush. Number two, by the way, was Ronald Reagan. But George Bush has time to go on vacation. He doesn't have time to show up for the funeral of some of our GIs. In fact, they keep cameras away when the planes arrive with the dead. You haven't seen a picture of it on TV. Why? Because they won't let you see a picture of it on TV. If a reporter tries to get close enough to one of those airfields to take a picture, that reporter will be shot or arrested. You think I'm exaggerating? I am not. For these guys, it's all about control of the story. Who cares what's true and what's not true? It's all about control of the story. So the bias that is built in, what this reporter said the other day that I thought was so interesting, he said, you know, Clinton went to all of these funerals, and the press, of course, was always invited. And it was dealt with in a respectful and dignified way. Bush has not gone to any funerals. Not one. And this has not been covered because we have not been allowed to get video. And because we are the television news, we don't run a story without video. Now, there's your bias. Is it good television? Or in radio, is there a good audio clip? And when And when somebody understands that that's the first level of bias, then they know, then they can fly in under the radar. They can, and the Republicans have gotten very good at this, providing sound bites, consistent messages and sound bites. Every single Sunday on all the political talk shows, are you seeing Democrat? Are you seeing the same Democrats over and over? Are you seeing? No, you're seeing Condi Rice. You're seeing Colin Powell. You're seeing Donald Rumsfeld over and over and over again. These guys, Wolfowitz. They understand the job is to generate good video and audio sound bites, because you know that's going to get the message out. So anyhow, I'm a little off topic here. Where I started with this, and I want to get back to it, is this whole notion that is being promoted by the Reich that Bill Clinton is responsible for 9/11. It's all Clinton's fault. I mean, let's ignore the warnings. Let's ignore it was incredible how aggressive the Clinton administration had been in trying to do something about this and trying to wake these guys up. And yet, nothing. After the attack, the administration stated that they had no warnings of attack, but they had received specifically, on August 6th, a month before the attack, George Bush personally got a briefing that Osama bin Laden was planning to hijack planes and use them as weapons against East Coast targets, according to CBS News. The Bush administration, now we know from the Intelligence Committee hearings, received specific warnings predicting what happened, or something close to it, from Israel, Germany, Egypt, the United Kingdom, and Russia, among others. Why have there been no investigations? Why, you know, oh, it's Clinton's fault. This from unanswered questions.org. Shortly after taking office, John Ashcroft sent a memo to department heads outlining his seven top priorities. Counterterrorism was not one of them. Two-star General Donald Kerik commented, quote, Clinton's advisors met nearly weekly on how to stop bin Laden. I don't detect that kind of focus from the Bush administration. A June 29, 2002 AP story said, and I quote, President Bush's national security leadership met formally nearly 100 times in the months prior to the 9/11 attacks, yet terrorism was the topic of only two of those sessions. Now, there are some on the left and some even on the right and in the middle who look at this kind of stuff and get paranoid, say, well, you know, Bush was tanking in the polls. He hadn't won the election fair and square. There were a lot of people who were raising questions. The news was just starting to come out. You know, the New York Times and USA Today were doing that recount that came out. They got published in November after 9/11 that showed that when they actually counted all the votes in the state of Florida, Al Gore actually won more votes than George Bush did. And Al Gore actually won the election when the New York Times did the recount. Remember? You probably don't, because it got buried, the story. Because and later when the Times was asked, why did you bury the story? In fact, why did your headline imply that Bush had won when, in fact, you go down to paragraph 16 in the story and it says Gore won in Florida? And Hal, what's his name? Hal Raines, I think, the editor of the New York Times, said something to the effect of, well, you know, it was a time of national crisis. We didn't want to undermine the commander-in-chief by pointing out to people that he didn't actually win the presidency. So they were in this crisis. They were in the middle of crisis mode. They knew that any day now a report was going to come out from the New York Times and USA Today and a consortium of newspapers demonstrating that George Bush hadn't won in Florida. Greg Palast's report had been aired on BBC. You can still find it on the internet on the BBC website. It's a 20-minute video clip that everybody in England saw, where he found out that Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush had rigged the election in Florida by taking the names of by paying millions of dollars to a Republican-connected Texas-based database company to take the entire Florida voter rolls and compare those voter rolls in predominantly black districts of Florida with the felon list from the state of Texas, and not even with a tight match. Where, you know, if it was Jimmy Johnson here, it could be Jay Johnson there. and they bumped 90,000 people off the rolls, the majority of them African Americans. And this story had come out in Europe. And this administration was facing a real unraveling. They may have to give up the presidency. In fact, Jeb and Catherine could have even been prosecuted for felony vote tampering. And there are the paranoids who say, well, they let 9/11 happen because they knew, as George Bush said to Mitch Daniels afterwards, and this is, well reported. In fact, this is his laugh line when he gives speeches now to his donors. He says, and I said to Mitch Daniels, I won the trifecta. Yeah, all three with 9/11. So there are those paranoids who suggest that the reason why Bush won't spend money on port security right now is because he'd really like to have another attack. I am not quite that paranoid, but God help us if I'm wrong and the paranoids are right. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. What was Bill Clinton up to in those years before 9/11?
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
As your boss, I've noticed you've been dragging at work lately. So, take tomorrow off. Here, take the company tickets to the game. Box seats okay? And take my car.
In a guy's perfect world, you'd have it all. Well, now you can. Because Domino's introduces Philly Cheesesteak Pizza. Guys like Philly Cheesesteak, guys like Domino's Pizza. Get your medium Philly Cheesesteak Pizza for $9.99, and you can get any second medium for just $5 more. Get the door. It's new Domino's Philly Cheesesteak Pizza. Limited time offer. Prices and terms may vary. You must ask for this offer when ordering.
This is Mike Malloy. Another year has passed since the attacks against us on September 11th, 2001. Another year and still the refusal of the Bush administration to investigate the massacre of 3,000 people on U.S. soil. Another year of killing authorized by the Bush administration of civilians in two countries who had absolutely nothing to do with the terrorism conducted against us. Another year marking the absolute failure of leadership of the Bush administration. How much longer until we, the citizens of this country, say enough? I'm Mike Malloy.
Those of you who think George W. Bush is a doll will be thrilled to know that he is, literally. Thanks to Blue Box Toys Incorporated, George has become his own G.I. Joe doll. For only $39.95, you can have this 1-foot-tall plastic action figure of George in your own home. It depicts him all dolled up in that Top Gun-style flight suit that he donned a few months ago for his political stunt landing on an aircraft carrier. The George doll has him in a heroic pose, as though he's about to leap into his fighter jet and single-handedly go smoke out old Osama bin Laden, Saddam Hussein, and all the rest of the world's baddest evildoers. Even more dynamic is the name given to this made-in-China action figure. Elite Force Aviator George W. Bush, U.S. President and Naval Aviator. A Blue Box Toys spokeswoman defended the inclusion of Bush in the company's Elite Force collection because, she said, he fit the criteria of being, quote, somebody in uniform, a military hero of some kind. Holy Audie Murphy, a military hero? George W.? He's the guy who ducked duty in Vietnam by having a politically connected family friend pull strings so he would avoid being drafted. Even after he was slipped into the Air National Guard, he's the guy who went AWOL for an entire year of duty. He's also the guy who shamelessly uses our military forces for his own political gain, including that made-for-TV military stunt landing aboard the aircraft carrier where he declared the Iraqi war to be over, a political pronouncement that is cruelly cynical for the families of more than 100 U.S. soldiers who've been killed in Iraq since then. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's absurd that Bush the poseur would be portrayed as an elite aviator, much less a hero. But I think this doll is somehow appropriate, for it shows him for what he is, a toy soldier. Maybe next we can get a bobblehead doll of Bush. Now that would be appropriate.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
It's Tom Hartman on the IU America Radio Network, one of the folks in our chat room. By the way, if you want to drop into our chat room, in the last hour we solved the Kennedy killing, the JFK assassination, and who knows what will happen in this hour. All you got to do is go to TomHartman.com, click on the radio show link, click on the chat room link. That'll take you to the trade forum on CompuServe. Click the chat button, and boom, you are in. And for one of the most interesting, intelligent, thoughtful, insightful, profound, and cool discussions going on the entire World Wide Web. Just to clarify, somebody in there pointed out that the Miami Herald had done a recount, and they said that Bush won. And the conservatives point to that, whereas the New York Times did a recount, and they said that Gore won, and the USA Today and this consortium of newspapers. And what's the difference? The difference is, and this was a strategic mistake, and I don't want to dwell on this, and we won't come back to this again, but the strategic mistake that Al Gore made was that he said he only wanted certain counties to be recounted, those counties where there were obviously screw-ups, where Pat Buchanan got more votes than Al Gore did, those kinds of situations. And the Miami Herald recounted only those counties that were in dispute before this thing went to the Supreme Court of Florida. After that point, the Gore campaign and the Supreme Court of Florida were suggesting that the entire state should be recounted, and that is what all the newspaper consortium did. And when they recounted the entire state of Florida, they found that there were more votes for Gore than there were for Bush, that Gore actually won that election. And that's the count that everybody acknowledges, except the conservatives, who keep pointing to that Miami Herald recount, which was just a few counties, as I recall. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. This is Tom Hartman helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. And we've got, Ken in Mount Clemens, Michigan on the line. Ken, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. You were just talking about Clinton getting all the blame in Posner's new book.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering...
Well, I don't think Posner's book is so much pointing the finger at Clinton anywhere near as much as the other book is. But Posner does a very good job of appearing to be unbiased when, in fact, he has an agenda, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was a little confused. I mean, I don't know what to think about a guy like that. That I didn't read his books about the Kennedy conspiracy and stuff, but he debunks all that, and then this time he seems to be trapped and going the opposite way. I was kind of, confused about that. But I haven't heard much about, like on your program or any of the other ones, of Al Franken's book. Have you read that?
Yeah, I haven't. In fact, we're going to have Al on as a guest, I think, next week.
If oh, great.
Week, the week after.
Well,
yeah.
I'm about halfway through that, and I've really enjoyed it. And there's that one chapter is just fantastic about what Clinton did do against Osama bin Laden, and I have not heard, as much talk about it as I read in that book.
Yeah, I was going to go through some of those details.
Great.
Let me do that now. Is that your point, Ken?
That's my point.
Okay, great.
Okay,
thanks
thank you
for the
much.
Call, and I'll get on a rant about that right now. And Tim in Hartford, if you want to hang on just a second, we'll take your call in just a minute, because we've got a break coming up, and I just want to make a couple of these points. So, Tim, if you'll hold on, we'll take you after the break, and then we can talk for a little bit longer than we might if the break ran up against us. In February 1993 was the first attack in the World Trade Center. Four followers of the Egyptian cleric Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman were captured, convicted of the World Trade Center bombing in March of 1994, and sentenced to 240 years in prison each. The purported mastermind of the plot, Ramzi Youssef, was captured in 1995 and convicted in the bombing in November 1997 and also sentenced to 240 years in prison. Somehow this gets forgotten. In November of 1995, there was a car bomb in Saudi Arabia that killed five Americans and two Indians. The United States government wanted to get the guys who were doing this, but the Saudi government arrested four Saudi nationals who confessed to the bombing, and the Saudis beheaded them before the U.S. could even question them. They didn't allow the questioning. But it gets more interesting here. In June of 96, Clinton started getting really aggressive about this. I'll tell you about that right after the break. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, Uncommon Sense in the Radical Middle. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Disheartening news about the environment can be bad for your mental health. According to a psychologist and author, her prescription, get involved. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Chelis Glendinning is a New Mexico psychologist who counsels victims of child abuse and other traumas. She says her patients employ a number of psychological strategies in an effort to cope with their experiences, and she sees some of those same behaviors in people worried about the future of the planet.
Given how many changes are taking place and so quickly, all of this has a really severe impact on our psyches. And one of the typical responses to trauma is a sense of futurelessness.
Glendinning, the author of a new book called Off the Map, says trauma victims tend to dissociate, to disconnect from themselves and from their experiences. She says our society is doing the same. She says we're in denial about global warming, toxic pollution, and other environmental hazards. But Glendinning says we have to face these problems.
There is a sense of futurelessness that so many people around the world share at this point. It seems so important that we can move beyond the denial, move beyond the protective apathy that so many people experience, and become human beings who are facing these problems and feeling them and grieving for them and feeling afraid and become active.
Glendinning says people need to stop ignoring these problems and get involved. She says any kind of action, whether volunteering in your community or planting a garden in your backyard, lets you regain a sense of hope and a feeling that you have some control over the future. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities, like from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies, Raven Simone. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out, so he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Dolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk, Saturdays and Sundays on the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring. Bound by wild desire, I fell into a ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
One of the greatest showmen, one of the greatest musicians, and one of the finest people in show business from everything I've heard in the of the last 30, 40 years, Johnny Cash died today. You know, it's funny. 1968, I started in professional radio, and my first, and back then, you know, I was 17 years old, and I was, you know, long-haired rock and roll fan, whatnot, whatever you want to call it, and my first job was as a DJ at a country western station in Lansing, Michigan. And I had never listened to country western music before, and I actually developed a strong affection for it. I am actually proud to say there's some brilliant country western music out there, and Johnny Cash, it was the best. He was always my favorite. There was about a half a dozen that I really. There's a lot of it that just screechy, makes me crazy, and I don't like. But Johnny, oh boy, was he good. And it's so sad to hear he has gone. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. 1-800-825-5937. If you'd like to be on the program. And Tim in Hartford, thanks for waiting over the break and holding on while I went on about Johnny Cash there. Welcome back to the program.
Hi. Well, I hope the chat room also can solve the Ben Affleck, Jennifer Lopez problems, too, in their spare time.
Oh, we'll put them on it.
Okay.
You should drop in there.
Yes.
It's an interesting group.
You know, it is interesting. With all due respect to Al Franken and his trying to be the spin meister for the Democratic Party, as someone who certainly has not said that Clinton is to blame for 9/11, nonetheless, there's a lot of blame to go around for all sides. And I think,
sure.
You know, it's just absolutely amazing. I heard someone on a local talk radio station, you know, say yesterday, Republican, well, the war against terrorism was finally started on September 11th. I was going, huh? You know, what happened to all the other stuff? I mean, you know, even going back as far as Reagan, Bush, those 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Bush was a head spy master, and there was so much lost in the translation. The fact that we did not have the translators that we needed, you know, during that 8 years of people to intercept and start looking seriously at the communications. This is a mass media world, and our spy agencies didn't have sufficient translators to look through.
Well, it got even worse, Tim, when George W. Bush came into office. There were a bunch of Arabic-speaking people who were working for the NSA doing translation of intercepts who were gay. And they all got fired because they were gay.
Yeah,
I'm not kidding you.
I think I've heard that story before, and you know, I heard of my local congressman, you know, trying to once again to lay the blame on. He went as far back as Jimmy Carter, you know, that he laid off a bunch of spies and we needed the people on the ground, and that sort of thing. Even I tried to counter saying, well, you know, Reagan and Bush were there if they were so concerned about these spy, spy problems and terrorism, you know, why, what did they do? I mean, the coal bombing, for example, you know, there's a lot of things that we were just simply asleep at the switch. And I'm not sure, you know, what kind of tact you were really trying to take to try to revitalize Clinton's reputation.
Well, I'm not trying to revitalize his reputation. I'm trying to point out that when these cons come on the air and do this wall-to-wall media blitz saying,
sure,
George Bush had nothing to do with this, it wasn't his fault, everything is fine, he's the guy who saved us from that nasty Bill Clinton who was letting it all go down the tubes, that they're lying.
Oh, absolutely. Or they try to say, well, he was only on the job for a little while. Well, he brought in the people who'd been there before. I mean, this wasn't a bunch of rookies. You know, before Cheney, Rumsfeld, all of these guys that had been there for, you know, in the past, going back as far as Nixon, you know, these guys were involved with government and the spy networks and everything, and they slept on the job. But, and all of the other subject matter, I mean, the fact is, we at that time, we let a lot of, you know, students who probably should have been questioned, and I'm certainly not going to be, you know, Mr. Ultra-Conservative you know, a Patriot Act person to start questioning every single student out there. But when essentially these students are coming in and they're not going to school, but, you know, are essentially they're ignoring the FBI warnings about, you know, these guys are only
visa applications. The visa applications of every one of those 19 men who flew those airplanes into those buildings, every single one of them, their visa applications should have, by just the normal standards of the INS, should have been rejected. And several of them made comments or claims in their visa applications that actually not only should have been rejected, but should have been investigated. But the Bush administration had started a policy of open door to Saudis. And I think it may well be that one of the reasons why so many of the hijackers were Saudis, 14 or 15 of them, I forget which it was, I think it was 14 of the 19, were Saudis, was not because there is this big movement in Saudi Arabia to get us, although there is, but because it was easiest to get into the United States if you were a Saudi citizen, because when Bush came in, he changed the rules for Saudis trying to get visas because his dad was business partners with the Bin Laden family, because he had had his own company bailed out of trouble back in Texas years earlier by the Bin Laden family.
I agree with your point, but are you saying that these people weren't, I don't even really know that history, are you saying they weren't here during the Clinton's time? That they only came in during the Bush time? That's kind of what you're implying there.
Yeah, that's my understanding, that they came in. Yeah,
I thought several of them had been living here for years.
Well, you may be right.
I mean, you know, that's
you're
that's,
right. You're right.
That's generally my concern. And again, Clinton, you know, where was the pressure on the Saudis to really, you know, wrap? Well, don't even get me started on energy policy. We keep funneling these guys in the Middle East terrorists like crazy.
Oh, I know. The last president to talk about that was Jimmy Carter. By the way, if I am wrong on these guys coming in, I'm going to track it down and I'll set the record straight. I do like to make sure that people who are listening walk away from this program with accurate information. And, Tim, thanks for correcting me on that. You were saying...
Where people are talking about assassinating Arafat and, you know, quote, removal of him one way or another, I think is part of Bush's legacy of preemptive strikes. And we have to really look at the fact that, you know, papers like the Jerusalem Post and others, you know, are behind this effort to assassinate him. Do you know anything about the Jerusalem Post and who's behind
it? I've read it. I've been to Israel many times. I've been in the Middle East a lot, and I've read the Jerusalem Post. But other than that, no, I don't know a great deal about it.
Because they had an editorial essentially saying it was time to assassinate Arafat.
And well, it would be a logical extension of their policies.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're the type of people that, you know, certainly have tremendous... I saw them on C-SPAN today, you know, those kind of people. Just really wondering, you know, who's behind them also and stuff. So, Tom,
we have to keep in mind that both sides, neither side in that conflict is without problems at this point, Tim.
Definitely.
I think Howard Dean is right that we need to be... we need to be perceived as an honest broker in the region rather than as, you know, taking one side against the other. Tim, thanks for your call and thanks for the comments. Let me just real quickly go through a few other things here, and then we got Brian in Manchester, New Hampshire. Other actions that Clinton took: more international cooperation with intelligence. He opened a new enforcement academy in Budapest. He opened an FBI office in Moscow, Cairo, Islamabad, Tel Aviv, and Beijing, dedicated to anti-terrorism, held weekly meetings on anti-terrorism, weekly. The Bush administration, keep in mind, up until 9/11, held 100 meetings and only two had to do with anti-terrorism. The Clinton administration was meeting weekly on anti-terrorism. He pushed for anti-terrorism legislation in response to the Oklahoma, Atlanta, and First World Trade Center bombings, proposed this legislation. Republicans watered it down. The main leaders against this anti-terrorism legislation were Trent Lott and Orrin Hatch. Orrin Hatch called it a phony issue to try to divert attention away from the president's private life. Bill Clinton worked to increase airline security. He asked for additional $1 billion to improve security at airports and other public sites. The Republicans worked against that. In 1998, he ordered the freezing of Osama bin Laden's assets. In 1999, he froze $254 million of the Taliban's money. In 1999, he convinced the UN to impose sanctions on Afghanistan to extradite bin Laden. In August of 1998, car bombs outside the U.S. embassies in Kenya and Tanzania. Four participants with ties to Osama bin Laden were captured, convicted, and sentenced to life in prison during the administration of Bill Clinton. Clinton authorized bin Laden's arrest and or assassination. President Clinton ordered missile strikes against targets in Afghanistan to hit Osama bin Laden. You remember that? Remember when he fired again into those missiles into Afghanistan? And all the cons, all the conservatives, and radio talk show, oh, my God, he's trying to wag the dog. It's wag the dog. Go watch that movie. Yes, indeed, that's what it is. That's what he's up to. He's trying to fool us. He's trying to divert attention away from the fact that he's having this affair with his intern. You know how close he missed bin Laden by 2 hours. And if the Republicans hadn't jumped down his throat, he might have tried again. But he was, you know, how close has the Bush administration come to getting bin Laden? But no. Anyhow, 1-800-TALK, yes, 1-800-825-5937. Brian in Manchester, New Hampshire, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You are on the air, Brian.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, that's in the August 20th strikes against bin Laden in 1998. He barely missed. You're right. If it wasn't for the Pakistani, there's still many of them are still pro-Taliban. The ISI intelligence services, they warned bin Laden that by a cell phone call. He got out of there, but they were all direct hits. And I believe the Clinton administration, they had aircraft carriers stationed off or destroyers stationed off the coast of Afghanistan and Pakistan for the last half or more of 2000 AD during the time, you know, the cusp between the Clinton and the Bush administration. If the CIA gave him any sign of bin Laden raising a hair of his head, that they wanted to try again. They wanted to hit him again. And
the time, the Republicans were screaming, don't let him do it! Don't let him do it! It's terrible! He's doing
patriotic,
it to divert attention! He's doing it to win the election!
Patriotic Republicans, and all they could whine about was wag the dog and Monica Lewinsky's address there. The thing, I'm looking at page 657 and 658 of Sidney Blumenthal's book, The Clinton Wars, and he talks about the attack on Afghanistan and Sudan, that so-called aspirin factory on page 658 here, it says that at the time, the CIA's protection of its sources and methods precluded it from releasing certain information that it had that bin Laden was an owner of the Military Industrial Corporation, which controlled the Al Shifa factory, that so-called aspirin factory, and that its manager lived in bin Laden's villa in Khartoum, Sudan. The wag the dog scenario became a staple of Clinton's critics, et cetera. And that it goes on from there. It was not just an aspirin factory. It was a factory basically owned by bin Laden and people, partners of his. And one other quote from that Blumenthal mentions throughout this period, this 1998 period just after the African embassy bombings, quote, throughout this period and the remainder of the Clinton presidency, no member of Congress ever called on the National Security Advisor to discuss the rising problem of al-Qaeda, end quote. That's page 658 of Mr. Blumenthal's book, The Clinton Wars.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. I knew some of the Marines killed in 1983 in Beirut. This is something that it crosses political parties, this subject of terrorism. And we need to stick together and not blame on this. But then painting Bill Clinton as some kind of putting a flower in his gun kind of pacifist during his presidency is just, you know, Lynn Samuels made a good point that why during the 8 years of his presidency was there no 911 attacks on Bill Clinton? On his America.
Yeah. Well, because he was going after, like you said, he missed bin Laden by 1 hour because ISI warned bin Laden. And who was the head of ISI? General, what was it, Mahmoud or Mohammed?
Musharraf is the leader.
But the head
kind
of ISI.
A secular, yeah.
Yeah, who was meeting with two senators on 9/11 in Washington, D.C. And he's the guy who just before that had wired $100,000 to Mohammed Atta. And after 9/11, he just kind of retired quietly in Pakistan.
And
this administration is not looking into that, apparently.
One last point, Tom, that they also, these conservatives, they don't want one drop of Dick Cheney's energy policy to come out because they knew that we were courting the Taliban. It goes back through the 90s, too. Of course, our oil companies have great power, and they wanted the Caspian, the Central Asian oil, the Afghanistan pipeline. They were courting the Taliban right up through August 2001.
Yeah. Now, Brian, why do you think that the Republicans and the extreme right wingers on the talk shows all across America were so aggressively going after Bill Clinton whenever he tried to stop bin Laden, whenever he tried to work against terrorism during the last 3 or 4 years of
his administration? They wanted the White House. They wanted him impeached. They wanted the Lewinsky thing to keep controlling every minute of airtime, basically, on the electronic airwaves, and they didn't care what Al-Qaeda did, even though the amount of human suffering that they did in those African embassy bombings, you know, we as Americans, we have to remember other human beings suffer under terrorism, too. That it caused thousands of casualties, hundreds of deaths, but in nearly the same sort of level of human suffering as 9-1-1 in this country, or more perhaps. And Bill Clinton took this seriously. He was looking for support from the Republican Congress. He didn't get it. All he got was basically, especially in the public eye, was Monica Lewinsky. You know, let's stay on that. Even when he was trying to get after this demon to kill off this. There's no other way. If Saddam Hussein is a choir boy compared to bin Laden. If Osama chemical weapons stock, we would really have a real enemy.
Saddam Hussein was a piker compared to what's the guy in Zimbabwe?
Mugabe.
You want a list of bad guys. I mean, I've been in half their countries. There are people out there who make it. Burma. Look at Burma. There are countries. And we're doing business with Burma. And they make bin Laden look like a choir boy. Osama.
Great democratic allies they could be in Burma, too, but that's not. They don't have nearly enough oil.
And that's the thing. That's what it boils down to.
Yeah.
Brian, thanks for the call.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for sharing that with us. I do appreciate it. The Washington Post pointed out yesterday. Perhaps you noticed there was an article. There's several. Actually, there's one today, Wolfowitz Shifts Rationale in Iraq War, and the one yesterday, Bush cites 9/11 on all manner of questions. And they point out that in the past six weeks, George Bush, while not mentioning Osama bin Laden by name once in almost a year in a major speech of any sort, only in response to reporters' questions, but in the last 6 weeks, he has used 9/11 as his excuse for energy policy, campaign fundraising, tax cuts, unemployment, deficit, airport security, Afghanistan, and the death toll in Iraq. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Boy, I can't believe I didn't do it. I really missed the boat. Interest rates were at historic lows. I knew the economy was turning around. I could have called General Steel and saved a ton of money on the building I needed, and I'd be ready for the new economy. Yep, I really blew it.
Will this be you? Perhaps a year from now. Let General Steel Corporation show you how to take advantage of this unique moment in history. A steel building from the General will save you time and money compared to conventional construction. And you can hold your building delivery for up to 1 year with a small deposit. Small business owners know that now is the best time to build and prepare for the new economy. Whether you need a 60 by 200 foot building for under $15,000 or 100 by 175 for under $98,000, call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need manufacturing or warehouse space, you need the General. If your church or school needs to expand quickly and save money, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-DEAL. This moment in history won't last forever. Call 1-866-96-DEAL today.
Oh, 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 ice cold milk and an Oreo cookie. They forever go together with a classic combination. When a dark, delicious cookie meets an icy cold sensation, like the one and only creamy, crunchy chocolate O-R-E-O keeps your milk from getting lonely. Oh, 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 the one and only.
Only Oreo in classic or chocolate cream.
Oh, 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 the one and only.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
We have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector!
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with Anna?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on, there. This is a commercial for a major radio network. We can do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Show.
We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, BartCop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man, or people who had more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
you know, it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to go on.
Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, I left Kentucky back in 49 and went to Detroit working on assembly line. The first year they had me putting wheels on Cadillacs. Every day I'd watch them beauties roll by, and sometimes I'd hang my head and cry, 'cause I always wanted me one that was long and black. One day I devised myself a plan that should be the envy of most any man. I'd sneak it out of there in a lunchbox in my hand. Now getting caught meant getting fired, but I figured I'd have it all by the time I retired. I'd have me a car worth at least $100,000. I'd get it one piece at a time, and it wouldn't cost me a dime. You'll know it's me when I come through your town.
I'm one piece at a time, Johnny Cash. The great Johnny Cash, who passed away today or last night. I'm not sure exactly when it was, but within the last 24 hours, he will be missed. They say he died of a broken heart. His wife, June, also an extraordinary entertainer and apparently a very fine person as well, preceded him. So President Bush, George Bush, was asked by a reporter. I get this. A reporter asked George Bush about the fact that he's in the process of raising $170 million for his primary campaign, that is, to become the Republican nominee for president, when there is nobody opposing him. Does this have to do with, you know, some of the rules that allow you to keep money that doesn't get spent, or does this have to do with pre-raising money for the general election while the Democrats are having to spend their money on the primaries? Or does this have to do with some way of getting around campaign? You know, what's the deal here? What's going on? Why are you doing this? Why are you raising, Mr. Bush, $170 million, $1 million a whack every time you sit down, go to some little town and do something that seems political so the government pays for the trip, and then, bam, sit down with a bunch of fat cats and raise $1 million. He's good for at least $1 million a night. Why? What's going on? What's the situation? The Washington Post says, when asked in July about the $170 million budget for his primary campaign where he has no opposition, George Bush said, quote, "Every day I'm reminded about what 9/11 means to America. We're still threatened." Remarkable. Remarkable. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. Talk radio for the rest of us. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
Through a hole
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Animal Talk, your animalogical super information highway about pets. Every Saturday and Sunday, we take your calls, help you with your pets, give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like, from Eight is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Saturday noon to 2, Sunday 7 to 9 p.m. on the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Tom Roberts. American troops reportedly have mistakenly killed at least 8 Iraqi police officers at a checkpoint near the town of Fallujah. Laura Iyama reports.
Fallujah police were pursuing what they believed were bandits in a white BMW without license plates. As the chase neared a U.S. military checkpoint, the police say they turned around. American troops then opened fire upon the police and the suspects. One policeman says one of the police vehicles was an unmarked pickup truck with a machine gun on top, so that may have led to the shooting, but he says the police were shouting, "We are police," before driving off the road. Some hospital staff say their nearby building was hit by U.S. bullets and shells. Laura Iyama, Washington.
Trying to bolster American support for the U.S. effort in post-war Iraq, President Bush welcomed home U.S. troops. In his speech at Fort Benning, Georgia, to the 3rd Infantry Division, the president said he's asking U.S. Congress for more money.
As we ask so much of our military, we in government have a solemn responsibility to give you every tool you need to achieve victory.
The president says many terrorists have mistaken beliefs about the United States. There is a hole in the world of music today with the death of legendary performer Johnny Cash. Paul Wells is the director of the Center for Popular Music at Middle Tennessee State University. He says the man in black left some big shoes to fill.
Asking someone to step up and fill Johnny Cash's shoes is like expecting there to be someone to come along and take Babe Ruth's place or Michael Jordan's place or something like that in the world of sports.
Cash died early this morning of complications from diabetes. Meanwhile, Emmy Award-winning director John Ritter has died suddenly. The 54-year-old actor collapsed while filming the ABC comedy Eight Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter last night. His spokesman said he died of a previously unknown heart problem. Ritter was also the star of the 70s sitcom Three's Company. More in a moment.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... but on the inside, I'm all...
feeling. Whoa, 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 feeling.
Just because I look like... doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking... you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
An audio tape recording aired on the eve of the second anniversary of the 9/11 attacks probably carried the voice of Osama bin Laden, CIA officials say. While the initial analysis of the tape obtained by Al Jazeera TV was inconclusive, further review of the tape determined the voice was probably that of one of the world's most wanted men. Retail sales numbers for last month were strong, but not quite what financial experts had expected. Shoppers spent 0.6% more in August than in July. At the wholesale level, once you strip out volatile goods like food and gas, prices were up just 0.1%. More after this.
We'll be back with more music, but first, a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. There's a front moving in from the south, which is going to mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
9-month-old twins joined at the pelvis were separated yesterday in Los Angeles. The LA Times reports the girls are doing well after the operation. A new study has found that, as of 2000, almost 5 million people a year die from smoking-related diseases. Researchers say for the first time, deaths from smoking were as high in the developing world as in industrialized countries. Suzanne Chislett reports.
The study published in the British Lancet Medical Journal is an annual snapshot of deaths among smokers worldwide. It found an estimated 930 million of the world's 1.1 billion smokers live in the developing world. And around the globe, three-quarters of smoking-related deaths are among men, though the figure is higher in developing nations. The researchers estimate that there were 4.8 3 million premature deaths from smoking in the year 2000, 2.41 in developing countries. Suzanne Chislett, London.
I'm Tom Roberts, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Yesterday, in Brakes 101, master cylinders, calipers, and pads were demystified. You learned they are a lot like hearts, muscles, and skin, all designed to stop cars and save lives. When I come back, it's Brakes 102. Hi, I'm Bobby Likas. Every summer, callers on the Car Clinic Network ask what's causing that odor when I turn on my air conditioner. And the answer? Bacterial growth in the AC system. The good news is there's an ingenious process from BG Products that cleans and disinfects your entire ventilation system without having to dismantle it. You'll breathe easier with a BG ventilation service, and your car will smell like new. To find a shop that performs this service, go to bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com. Welcome to Brakes 102 at Car Clinic College. Today's lesson, analog braking systems, or ABS. Ever press the brake and nothing? You just pumped and hoped for the best? Hope no more. The best is here. Computer-controlled ABS. This system monitors the speed of individual wheels and applies precise braking power to each. And if any brake starts to lock or slows at a different rate than the others, that specific brake is automatically pumped or pulsed to prevent lockup. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, Stream 145. Broadcasting live on several different internet radio stations, radiopower.org, live365.com, ieamericaradio.com, and with archives at whiterosesociety.org. And just wanted to share with you a quick email I got from John in San Diego a couple days ago. He said, "We the people need to take a more proactive role in contacting TV stations, newspapers, etc. But there's a big problem," he points out. "You know, a lot of people don't have the time. They don't know how to do it. We aren't writers. It's easy to pass us off as kooks." He says, "Would it be possible for a few of us to write and post or distribute a few basic form letters addressing some basic issues or basic skeletons of the letters that would make our lives a little easier?" John is responding to the suggestion I had made last week, and I've made many times over this last year on this program, that people form committees of correspondence, even if they're a one-person committee, to get out there and contact your elected representatives and post newspaper, post letters to the editor, to newspapers, and also to electronic media, radio stations, television stations. They're all starting to take notice of this stuff. They all have websites where you can post feedback. And let them know about your concerns on these issues. Well, I found that the People for the American Way has a website where you can just plug in your zip code, and boom, it comes back with a form where you can write a customized, or you can use their language, letter to your elected representatives, local, state, national, and to many of your media. And so I put a link to that. If you go to TomHartmanShow.com or just TomHartman.com and click on the link to the radio show, over in the left nav bar, there's one that says Write Your Reps with an exclamation mark after it. Click on that, and it'll take you to the page inside the PeopleForTheAmericanWay.org website that has that mechanism there to get it out. I didn't want to forget to pass that along. I've for 2 hours here been talking and completely missed it. This is day 215 of the search for weapons of mass destruction, day 730 of the search for that man whose name shall not pass the lips of George W. Bush. Did you notice in his when he was asked by a reporter last night, he didn't say his whole name, Osama bin Laden. He only said, either he said bin Laden or Osama. He's just terrified to say this guy's name. Here we are, on it goes, and boy, is it getting strange. The times are very strange, and what's going to come out of this? I mean, this is a real, real concern. In the midst of this, we have, you know, daily life goes on. We have to get on with our lives. We have to remain vital and healthy. We have to participate in the real world, the political world, the spiritual world, the natural world, all of these to be full multidimensional people. And one of the most thoughtful, insightful, and in many ways profound commentators on these issues is my good friend John Robbins, the only son of the founder of the Baskin-Robbins ice cream empire. John passed on the opportunity to inherit that empire, to instead pursue a deeper meaning to his life and our place, our humans' place in the world. John is the author of Diet for New America, many of you are familiar with. His most recent book is The Food Revolution, an absolutely brilliant work. I highly encourage you to go check it out. And John is with us today on the radio program here. John, welcome to the Tom Hartman Show.
Well, thank you, Tom. It's a real pleasure to be on your show.
It is. I am so happy you could make it. John, we know how the Oprah case that the meat industry, you know, from the Oprah case that the meat industry likes to sue for libel. You quote the meat industry, you know, that they, in Food Revolution, you have quotes from the meat industry that you refute. Has there been any reaction to that?
Well, yeah, there's been a lot. They haven't sued me yet. I don't think they want to. You know, they didn't come out very well in the Oprah suit. They tried to sue someone, Oprah Winfrey, who has extraordinary wealth, and I think they thought she would roll over. I think they thought she'd write a check and make it go away.
Yeah.
You know, they were suing her because she had said on her show when she learned some facts about mad cow disease, she said, "Well, that stops me right there from ever eating another hamburger."
Yeah.
And they told her they'd drop the suit. They sued her for $20 million, and they said, "Well, we'll drop the suit if you will go on your show and eat a hamburger." And she said she would never do it.
Hmm.
And so she actually went to a lot of struggle to fight with these guys in court over the legal side of it, and she won. And then she came out on the courtroom steps after the lengthy court battle was over, and she said two things, and they were fascinating, because one was widely picked up in the mainstream media, and that was, she said, the First Amendment not only lives, it rocks, bless her heart, which was, of course, that her freedom of speech had not been destroyed by this lawsuit that the cattlemen tried to impose on her. But the second thing she said was fascinating. She said, "I still am never going to eat another hamburger." And the mainstream media didn't talk about that so much.
That one didn't get picked up.
No, but, you know, she was saying that because she was aware, had become aware, as many people are becoming aware, that the way we eat has a lot to do with how we feel and how we think and how we interact with life and the consequences of our being here on this earth.
Well, tell us a little bit more about that, John. Let's dig a little deeper into that. How does our food just, you know, what we eat as we go through the day, how does that modify, for example, our feelings of our ability to feel a range of emotions, or the our ability to be flexible in our emotions? How does that alter the quality of life just inside our heads? Then we can talk about our bodies in just a moment, but I'm curious about that.
Well, you know, the way we think when we're healthy, our emotions tend to be more balanced, our thoughts tend to be clearer, our ability to respond tends to be more centered. When we're not healthy, when we're, for example, on sugar highs and sugar lows, this hypoglycemic rushes and valleys that a lot of people get on, or if we're polluting our body with a lot of chemicals and junk food, then that takes a toll on the way we experience ourselves, not just physically, but mentally. It takes a toll on our ability to think and to be perceived. I actually think that there's a, I don't know if conspiracy is the right word, because that implies some intentional malice. But there is this development in our culture today in which people are becoming apparently increasingly stupid, increasingly unable to think for themselves, to think critically, to evaluate information and to be objective, to see through the lies of a president that leads us into a war based on lies.
John, do you really think that people are getting more stupid, or do you think that that's just an indication of the media takeover, the media kowtowing to George W. because 9/11 was such a shock, and the cynical way that this administration has been exploiting the press and the media?
Well, I think that people are losing their... I mean, if you look at Fox News and what it does to people, if you look at what McDonald's food and what it does to people, there are so many ways that people are becoming less capable of fulfilling their potential to act as independent citizens of this planet and of this country, and live lives that are self-actualizing and caring and intelligent. There are many forces in our society that dumb us down, and one of those is the mainstream food. The McDonald's,
John, you were mentioning the
food.
Yeah, you were mentioning the chemicals and things. What about animals? Mammals share an endocrine and nervous system that is with us. We don't have all of the same metabolic systems and pathways neurologically that invertebrates have. But the vertebrate and the mammals in particular, cows, pigs, sheep, their adrenal glands are pumping out adrenaline when they know that they're going to die, and they know that they're going to die. And adrenaline is a hormone that modifies brain function. It modifies emotion. When we eat the meat from these animals, particularly if they're killed in ways that terrify them, aren't we getting you know, anxiety by food?
Well, that's a fascinating question, and I think there's a lot of truth to what you're suggesting, because in slaughterhouses, the animals are lined up. It's kind of an assembly line. And, you know, no effort is made there to spare them exposure to what's about to befall them. They see it, they smell it, they hear it. And
they're not
they
stupid.
Are
I mean,
they're... instinctively capable of fighting for their lives and fleeing for their lives. I mean, they have that mechanism within them, as do we.
Right.
Perhaps they're even more connected to those instincts than we are.
Sure. Do you think that this might be the origin of the halal and the kosher injunction?
Well, it's certainly part of it. I do think so. Yes, because then what these animals is when they're killed in. What happens when they sense that their death may be imminent, that they're about to be killed, is they secrete adrenaline. They secrete a whole plethora of hormones that are part of the biochemistry of terror, which course through their bloodstream and enter their muscles, to enable those muscles to contract rapidly and powerfully and immediately, to enable them theoretically to fight for their life or flee for their life. It's the flight or fight reaction. But of course, in the slaughterhouses, they are restrained and they're not allowed either to fight or to run. So what happens is those chemicals, the chemicals of their terror, remain uncombusted, undischarged in their muscles, which we then later eat. We call them steaks. We call them chicken McNuggets. And
burgers.
We're munching on the fear of that animal. Now, I don't know how to prove this exactly, but my intuition very strongly is that when we fuel our bodies and our minds and our lives from such fear, and frankly such cruelty, then it becomes harder for us. I mean, if you're somebody who has within you, if you respond to something like the old prayer, let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me, you want your life to be a statement of compassion and freedom and caring for other people and other beings and yourself, and you want to find a way to fit your life into in harmony into the greater whole of organic existence, what good does it do you? Are you really served by feeding off fear and pain and such deprivation?
Yeah. You know, I stopped eating meat when I was 17 years old, which was in 68, and haven't gone back. And over the years, I've known many people, and we raised three vegetarian kids, and who all still are in their 20s now. One will be 30 this Christmas. And I've known many people over the years who stopped eating meat, and there's this almost universal response that people make, and I don't want to make this a show about vegetarianism. I really want to bring this around to politics and
yes.
genetic programming and genetic engineering and some of these hot-button issues, but I did
yes.
want to get this out. So many people tell me that when they stop eating meat, they psychologically, and very often they'll even make the leap to spiritually, recalibrate, that they calm down, that they center, and that they're not as easily agitated. And I've always thought there has to be something to that, and that 1,000 years ago or more, the Jewish fathers and the Muslim fathers and mothers figured this out, and that's why we have halal and kosher. Anyhow, John, stick around. We'll be right back after the break. If you'd like to call and talk to John, 1-800-TALK-YES. This is Tom Hartman. I'll be right back.
Whether you've got bald tires, a flat tire, old tires, or are just tired of looking at white walls, there's no better time than right now to pick up a new set of Michelins. Because at Sears Auto Center, all Michelin tires are on sale at the lowest prices of the season. Every performance Michelin for cars, vans, light trucks, and SUVs. At America's number one store for Michelin tires, Sears Auto Center. The biggest Michelin sale of the season. Sears. Good life. Great price. Sale ends 9/23/03. Find us online at Sears.com or America Online keyword Sears.
Boy, I remember the good old days.
Yeah, when was that?
2003, of course, when interest rates were at historic lows and we knew the economy was turning around. What an historic opportunity. We really jumped on it. How'd you do?
Well,
we needed to expand our manufacturing and warehousing, so we called General Steel Corporation and ordered buildings engineered for our area and to meet our needs. And with the stucco and rock products provided by the General, our buildings look great.
How will you look back at this historic opportunity? Small business owners know that now is the best time to build that new warehouse, manufacturing, or retail space. Whether you need a 60 by 200 foot building for under $50,000 or a 100 by 175 for under $98,000, call toll free 1-866-96-DEAL. If you need to expand your business, you need the General. If your church or school needs to build quickly and save money, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-DEAL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-DEAL today.
Thieves in High Places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
she is. Thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really, Nancy?
Bantila is like cool.
Chinese lesson now. Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Bantila.
You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Who says Mike Malloy is rational and you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why not
me?
Put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. If you'd like to call and talk with John Robbins, author of The Food Revolution, among other books, Diet for a New America and several others, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. This is Tom Hartman. It is 25 minutes after the hour. John, are you on the board of the still on the board of the Global Renaissance Alliance?
Yes, I am.
You know, this weekend they're having a meeting down in Washington, D.C. I'm going to speak. Dennis Kucinich is speaking. I think John Conyers is showing up. Are you going to be there?
No, I can't be there, but I will be there in spirit, and I think it's a wonderful group and a wonderful activity.
Yeah, great. I'm sorry I'm going to miss you then. It would have been nice to get together. And Marianne Williamson, of course, will be speaking. She's the founder of that thing. Yeah. I've noticed that there seems to be, John, an epidemic of Alzheimer's across America. We're even seeing TV ads about it now. And I'm wondering if you think that this is related to the way that we're eating.
Well, it could be. We know that people with high homocysteine levels are more likely to get Alzheimer's. We know that Alzheimer's...
Let's explain, John, what homocysteine is.
Well, it's something that meat eaters have a lot of. You know, in a nutshell, and we know that people with high cholesterol have higher levels of Alzheimer's, and of course, people who eat a lot of meat have higher cholesterol. That's well known. You know, the effort to try to understand really what's causing the epidemic of Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia that is increasing is an ongoing one, and there's a lot left to learn. And I'm not implying that I know everything here or that any of us do. But there's an interesting development in that a number of forms of dementia, including Alzheimer's, look something like the human form of mad cow disease.
Yeah, and in fact, do you know about the study? Was it the University of Pennsylvania or a hospital in Pennsylvania where they actually did some autopsies on Alzheimer's?
Yeah, they did, and there was also one at Yale. They did where they autopsied presumed Alzheimer's victims, people who died presumably from Alzheimer's. That was the impression that everyone had of these poor people. And they died and they autopsied their brain. And they discovered that a very high percentage, far higher than they had ever imagined, actually had died from the human form of mad cow disease, CJD.
And nobody's talking about this and nobody is doing these autopsies routinely. They're very rarely done, actually.
Only when there's a specific study for a particular purpose. And it was interesting what the cattlemen said about National Cattlemen's Association and through their various organizations had to say about those studies. The biggest one was at Yale, and they said, well, it must be a local phenomena in Connecticut.
Hmm.
There was no evidence to suggest it was a local phenomena. Now, there was no evidence to suggest that it was representative of the whole country either. But you don't. You need to look into these things to discover what's really going on. And yet they obviously have a desire and a commitment, frankly, to not looking. because it, what they, what might be discovered is that we might have mad cow disease in the U.S. herds. There might, in fact, be real risk to U.S. consumers from eating U.S. beef. And in fact, we might discover that the practices of the cattle industry, which are profit-centered and short-term profit-centered, are actually contributing to the conditions, and causing in some cases the conditions, out of which these diseases develop and even emerge as real threats to human health.
We have just a few seconds here before this break, but doesn't a lot of the meat that's in the fast food industry here in the United States come from outside the United States, from South America?
Yes, some of it is rainforest beef still. Some of it comes from a whole host of countries. You know, we actually have, in the average hamburger, in a fast food hamburger, there could be meat from 35 different animals.
Amazing. John, hold that thought. We'll be right back after this break. This is the Tom Hartman radio program on the IE America Radio Network. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. If you have a question for John Robbins, author of The Food Revolution, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Hamilton.
And I'm Laura Miller.
It took only a year and a half, but an Enron executive is finally going to jail. Former Enron treasurer Ben Gleason was sentenced to 5 years in a federal minimum security prison Wednesday for helping mastermind a series of fake transactions which inflated Enron's bottom line by billions of dollars. Gleason will also pay $1.4 million in penalties. While in prison, Gleason will put in seven-hour work days, either serving food in the cafeteria or doing landscape work. 18 other Enron executives face criminal charges. The next will go to trial in April. Meanwhile, former CEO Kenneth Lay and Chief Financial Officer Jeffrey Skilling, considered the linchpins in the Enron pyramid, have not yet been charged.
Angry protests outside meetings of the World Trade Organization in Cancun. Tens of thousands of farmers, environmentalists, and labor activists converged outside the WTO's fifth ministerial meeting in the resort town as riot police clashed with hundreds of protesters. Inside the meeting, the most heated debate centered around the United States' insistence that other countries accept genetically modified food grown in the U.S. U.S. Ag Secretary Ann Veneman.
We want to eliminate export subsidies, the most egregious form of trade distortion. We want to significantly expand market access. Our goal is to greatly reduce trade barriers that prevent trade and economic expansion.
But many countries find expanded trade in genetically modified food hard to swallow. Korean rice farmer Lee Kyung-hee took his own life in protest outside the WTO talks Wednesday, calling attention to the plight of South Korea's rice farmers who have been devastated by WTO policies.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Hi, I'm Stephen Sack, and I host the Employees Lawyer Show on IE America Radio Network. We take calls from people all over the United States, and we help them in their job problems. So if you ever wondered what job rights you have and how to fight back, I'm the guy to call.
Listen to Stephen at his new time on Sundays from 9 a.m. until noon and rebroadcast from 9 p.m. till midnight.
For more information on my show or other shows on the IE America Radio Network, go to ieamericaradio.com. It's the best advice I can give.
best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring. Bound by wild desire, I fell into a ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire.
Oh, what a great song. What a great entertainer. Johnny Cash, dead today. One of the fine people, apparently in the music and entertainment industry, and hopefully in his worldview he has gone in the other direction from that song. We're talking with John Robbins, the author of The Food Revolution, right now. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, and John, I noticed there was a report 6 months ago, a year ago, thereabouts, that they did a study on people in India, and they found there was this anomaly. There was this population of people in India who never got Alzheimer's versus a population that had a lot of Alzheimer's, and it seemed that the difference was that the people who never got Alzheimer's were eating a traditional Indian food, which had a lot of curry in it, which contains curcumin, which is an antioxidant and anti-inflammatory that gets rid of homocysteine, and that the people who were getting Alzheimer's were eating meat-based diets and living in the cities. And two thoughts occurred to me. One is I got to get some curcumin and start taking it and eating more curries, and I've been doing that. And the other was I wonder if those people who are eating the traditional curries are simply eating a whole lot less meat, and that might have something to do with it.
Well, they probably are. You know what else is that any meat they might be eating or dairy products that they might be eating are from animals that are raised humanely and that live a natural life. In this country, our animal products are from factory farms. Yeah. They're from animals who are kept in conditions that are violate every one of their instincts and frustrate all of their natural urges. They're really abominations of cruelty. I mean, you don't have to be a vegetarian. You don't have to be an animal rights activist if you see the conditions to realize how far out of step we've gotten with anything resembling compassion for these animals. It's a violation of the human-animal bond.
Yeah, and we're doing it now with each other as well, John.
I mean, yes.
I believe that there's a relationship, but I don't want to get too esoteric here. We had David Suzuki on the program last week. You cite him a few times in your book, especially about genetic engineering. Yeah, he is. He's one of the truly brilliant people out there. You use his words to point out that genetic engineering is a misnomer. Can you explain that for us?
Well, you know, it implies the word engineering for most of us implies something very precise. This is very logical, technically sophisticated. We engineer our bridges to very fine tolerances. So when we hear the word genetic engineering, we sort of get the image or feeling that these people who are doing this know exactly what they're doing, know exactly what the implications are. And really, nothing could be further from the truth today.
Yeah.
They are messing around. They are guessing. They are speculating. It's a technology that is only in its earliest stages of its infancy, really.
Yeah, I subscribe to some of the science magazines, and in I think it was in Science, there was an ad for gene guns. $5,000, you can get a gene gun, and it allows you to blow DNA or shoot. I mean, literally shoot, like with little pellets. Shoot, I believe it's DNA, amino acid clusters into DNA, or it's to inject phages or viruses into DNA.
That's actually how it's done. And, you know, they don't have any control or even any way of tracking where it lands or takes up its residence, really.
It's literally done with a physical gun.
The life of every descendant forever of that organism down the line. It's a profoundly powerful technology, and it's in the hands now, in its infancy of its development, of people who are driven entirely by the profit motive. For example, genetically engineered foods, people think, it's being engineered to create greater yields, to help address world hunger, to lower pesticide use, all these environmental benefits and humanitarian benefits that one would assume one would hope would be the incentive and goal and motivation of the people using it, but that's really not what's happening. Monsanto, what they've done is they've engineered, modified is probably a better term, the DNA of plants, of seeds actually, so that those plants will be tolerant to Monsanto's herbicides, Roundup particularly, so that now you can spray the fields during the growing season with Roundup and you kill all the weeds, but you don't kill the Roundup ready soybeans or the Roundup ready corn or the Roundup ready canola. And the result of that is a greatly expanded use of these herbicides, these poisons.
Well, why else would Monsanto do it? I mean, they're in the business of selling herbicides.
That's exactly the truth. They are. And, you know, their patent on Roundup was running out, so generic versions were starting to show up in the world, which are much cheaper, by the way, and the same thing as Roundup. So what they did is, if you buy their seeds, you have to sign something saying you'll buy their Roundup. You won't buy the generics. So they get you coming and going. And they're very happy with it, but they're a very unscrupulous company. And I say that not because I'm against all corporations, but because of some of their actions. Like, for example, just this last week, Monsanto sued Oakhurst Dairy of Portland, Maine. It's a small dairy. And the reason they sued them is because Oakhurst says on its milk cartons that their milk doesn't contain any artificial growth hormones. That the milk is from cows who haven't been injected with Monsanto's.
So they're saying it's against the law to say that your product is pure?
That's right. The Monsanto claims that by making the statement that they don't, with the accurate statement that there's no growth hormone in that milk, the company is implying that there's some health problem with having the hormone in the milk.
So Monsanto says, you can't tell the truth on your labels.
That's
if you
absolutely
do, we're going to
they're
take you to court.
And they have sued other dairies also, quite a few of them. And, you know, when they do, this is an enormous company. It's based in St. Louis. It's a multi-billion dollar company. They are now one of the largest seed companies in the world. They are the largest pesticide company in the world. And they sell some small dairy who's trying to do the right thing, trying to do it naturally, trying not to use these artificial hormones to create more milk production in their cows, and they get sued. Well, they can't they can't withstand it legally. They can't pay for the lawyers' fees. They're not Oprah Winfrey.
It's amazing here in Vermont. We're a dairy state. I mean, there's a lot of cows in this state.
Yes.
And there's this thing I've been watching in the newspapers. The state is overproducing milk. They're producing so much milk that the price is dropping, and it's putting the farmers at risk. And so there's been this attempt to put together a coalition, sort of like OPEC, you know, where all the OPEC members say, okay, we'll all reduce the amount of oil we produce, and that way the price will go up. And the way that these guys are talking about reducing their milk production is by killing off some of their cows.
That's right.
And one of the dairies said, you know, if we just stopped using these artificial growth hormones that increase milk production, all of our milk production levels would fall to the hit point that we're all, you know, it'd be about a 5 or 10% drop that we're all trying to achieve.
Yes.
Our cows would have less mastitis. There would be fewer diseases. They would be healthier. We could say that our product was organic. And this guy, whoever said this, I mean, it was just roundly hooted out and largely ignored.
And interesting.
What's going on?
How addicted people become to the chemical orientation. And they just can't see their way. This would be a natural solution, really, wouldn't it? We all over the country we have an excess of milk production, by the way. Lot of it gets trashed.
Yeah,
and
we're subsidized.
Here's Monsanto. They developed this hormone, and they're getting it into the U.S. dairy herd. They knew going in that it would increase the mastitis, the udder infections that the cows would have dramatically. They knew that. That happens in every test. It happens in every case. So they sell they sell antibiotics along with the hormones to treat the mastitis, the udder infections that are caused by the hormones that they sell. It comes as a package.
Yeah, John, let me just change the topic.
This is a company,
here.
If I can return to my earlier point, that I think is more the crux here. This is the company in which today is controlling this technology of such incredible power of genetic engineering of foods.
Yes,
and their motive is so unbenign. It's so unhumanitarian. It has nothing. Their PR says that they're going to feed the world, that they're going to save the environment, that they're going to, bring back Jesus Christ, probably. I mean, they make all these promises and claims that have no relationship to the actual technology or the actual use of the technology thus far. Now, is it possible that the technology of biotechnology could someday increase yields in crops, someday be of benefit to humanity? Possibly.
Well, look at the vitamin A rice. I mean, this is the thing everybody's waving around.
Well, they are, but you see, that's not doing the things that are claimed. But in the advertising, golden rice, it's called, and it's actually yellow, but they call it golden because it sounds better. And it gets its color because they've spliced genetic material from daffodils, from the flowers, which are yellow, into the genome of the rice. And what happens then is the rice produces a small amount of vitamin A. Now, that wouldn't be a good thing because we have a lot of vitamin A deficiency in the world. And in the poorer parts of the world, it's a major cause of blindness.
Right.
So Monsanto, which, by the way, did not develop golden rice, they just put a couple $100,000 into the $100 million effort, very, very little. It was mainly funded by the Swiss government and the Rockefeller Foundation. Hmm. But Monsanto's claiming credit for it and claiming that this represents this great achievement. But the fact of the matter is that a 12-year-old boy, for example, would have to eat 35 cups of this golden rice to get their minimum daily requirement of vitamin A. In other words, there's very, very little in there. And furthermore, this rice that has been developed will not grow except in very carefully controlled conditions with very substantial irrigation and controlled irrigation and very carefully controlled climatic conditions. It hasn't yet been grown outdoors, as a matter of fact. Now, if you think about where in the world the poverty is and the hunger is, that's not a place where they can afford expensive irrigation systems and expensive control systems in their agriculture. That's where the food production is more marginal. Nor can they afford expensive genetically engineered seeds.
Yeah.
So the effort really isn't here being done here to help people. That's the PR. And that's what rubs me the wrong way, because they're lying to the public. And then they tell the public, we don't need labeling. Well, a recent
and the other thing that people are missing is that the big argument between the United States and the European Union right now is not, it has shifted. It's not so much about whether or not they will sell our genetically modified products. It's whether or not they should be labeled. And it's amazing to me that in the European press, everybody in Europe knows that the United States is willing to go virtually to war, certainly to trade war with Europe, over whether or not the products made in the United States, sold in Europe, will say contains genetically modified organisms or not.
The U.S. is in the process of appealing to the WTO, the World Trade Organization, to forbid the legislation in Europe that requires genetically engineered foods to be labeled. Now, I think we should have that legislation here, too.
Well, apparently it's against the law here. I mean, Monsanto's suing this dairy for saying there's no GMO stuff
in there. I know, and I think this is we got to revolt against this.
How do we revolt against it, John?
I'm sorry?
How?
Well, we got to get labeling. There's a wonderful organization called the Campaign to Label Genetically Engineered Foods that I think is doing a terrific job.
How do we find them?
You can get them on thecampaign.org is their website, thecampaign.org, .org. And they are the campaign to label genetically engineered foods. And they're doing a terrific job of educating people and getting action packs. And our Congressman Dennis Kucinich, who you mentioned earlier, will be speaking at the GRA conference next week, has introduced legislation into the U.S. Congress for the last several years that would require food that is genetically engineered to be labeled such. You know, the industry says that would unfairly stigmatize those products because it would imply that there was something less good about them.
Yeah.
Well, if it would imply that, then people have all the more reason to know the truth about it.
Yeah. I mean, John, we only have about a minute and a half, 2 minutes left here. I have two quick questions for you. Number one, how can people find out more about your book, The Food Revolution? Do you have a personal website?
It's foodrevolution.org, foodrevolution.org.
Okay. And actually, it looks like we have about 2 minutes here. And my other question, I've noticed that there's this hysteria across America about people being fat, and McDonald's just successfully turned back a lawsuit that they had something to do with somebody getting fat, obese, not just fat, obese. And I have seen enough unconnected pieces where I'm just connecting the dots in my brain, and tell me if I'm nuts on this or not, where it seems to me that about the same time the genetically modified corn came out and the United States government started subsidizing it so heavily that corn syrup, corn sugar, corn syrup became cheaper than sugar in the United States, and that all of the big soft drink companies dropped sugar. I mean, this was the transition of Coke and New Coke, right? Dropped sugar, cane sugar, and replaced it with corn syrup.
Yes.
And so now corn syrup is the main sweetener in our food supply. That was about the same time this obesity thing started taking off. And I'm wondering if the people who are obese, who are eating in fast food restaurants, that in many cases are eating the same meat and potatoes that they were eating when I was a kid, I mean, you know, 30 years ago, and people weren't getting obese, that the difference might be the corn syrup, and that this might be the first example of a genetically modified product causing an epidemic of crisis proportions in the United States. What do you think?
I think there's good reason to believe that. It's actually high fructose corn syrup that they're using now, and the numbers on it are just skyrocketing in the last 10 years, 5 years particularly. It's going up astronomically each year. The amount that this product, and it's all from genetically engineered corn.
Right, so this may be the evidence that GMO products are actually quite dangerous for us.
Yes,
and
they're very
again
dangerous
is
for the environment. GMO corn, genetically engineered corn, now has infiltrated all the organic corn to some extent.
Yeah, and so your website, John. We've run out of time here.
We got it.
Your website, so people can find more information, real quick.
Foodrevolution.org. And thank you, Tom. You're terrific.
Thank you, John. John Robbins, author of The Food Revolution. Thank you so much for being on our program today. This is Tom Hartman of the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this break.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The people who brought you the weekend, Michigan's unions, invite you to Labor Fest, a party for working families and our communities. Come to Ford Field, downtown Detroit, this Saturday, September 13th, noon to 6. It's free admission and includes tries for Guinness World Records, the world's largest picnic, and the world's largest postcard. Your kids can have an NFL player experience, enjoy marching bands, meet sports celebrities, and we have $5 Tiger tickets. Join us this Saturday, September 13th, free admission at the Detroit Lions Ford Field for the world's largest labor picnic.
For more info, go to miaflcio.org.
This is Mike Malloy. Another year has passed since the attacks against us on September 11th, 2001. Another year and still the refusal of the Bush administration to investigate the massacre of 3,000 people on U.S. soil. Another year of killing authorized by the Bush administration of civilians in two countries who had absolutely nothing to do with the terrorism conducted against us. Another year marking the absolute failure of leadership of the Bush administration. How much longer until we, the citizens of this country, say enough? I'm Mike Malloy.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
The Tom Hartman.
Hartman Show.
Adam, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What's up?
I just find it that you guys are really cynical to believe that Cheney or Bush or any of these guys would risk troop lives to make money. You must think that these guys are really evil people.
If you go back to 1998 and read the Project for a New American Century, what they were saying basically, if we're going to continue to consume 25% of the planet's oil, then our security is at risk if we can't secure our oil supplies. So we have to secure the oil supplies by seizing control of the Middle East.
Is this what you say they said, or is this what they have stated in a policy and
This is what they said.
Why is this on CNN every night?
It was on CNN a year ago. It was on CNN in 1998. They wrote a letter to Bill Clinton demanding that he attack Iraq, and that letter has been a public document ever since. And it was signed by all of these guys who are now in the administration.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The Mississippi Delta was shining like a national guitar. I am following the river down the highway through the cradle of the Civil War.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the America Radio Network. This is the Democracy Zone. Just to recap a few things from the week, this being Friday, of course, first of all, I'll let you know that our program today was produced here in Vermont by Louise Hartman and by Joe McPherson down in Atlanta, Georgia, and engineered by Brian Pace. Jay Balicki. Thank you, Jay. Jay Balicki down in Detroit. And then I wanted to get into a couple of things. Number one, I have an article that ran on commondreams.org on Wednesday, and I forgot to mention it Wednesday and yesterday, but you might want to check it out. It's about something I think is very interesting. We'll get into a little bit next week. The Project for a New American Century, in one of their documents, this was something co-authored by Wolfowitz, suggests that maybe there will be the development. Keep in mind, these are the guys who are in the shadows are controlling U.S. military policy. There should be the development of a genetically modified biological warfare agent that kills only people with particular genotypes. So only men or only women or only people who have black kinky hair or only people who have particular types of eyes or only people, you know, almond-shaped eyes, let's say, or only people who are red-haired Caucasians or only people who are over 5 feet tall or under 5 feet, whatever. And they suggest not only that this may happen, but that it may become a, quote, politically useful tool, end quote. So you can find that by going to www.commondreams.org, and you just scroll down to Wednesday's articles. It's the very top one. Or you can go to tomhartman.com and just click on the link that says Tom's Articles About Democracy, and you will find it. I think this is something that's rather startling, very strange. An email from Tim O'Banion. Thank you, Tim, very much for this, about my mention of Hitler and the trade unions the other day. He said, I really like your show. I wanted to correct a minor point you made about Hitler and the unions. The Nazis actually did the same thing as Stalin did with regard to the unions. They didn't dissolve them. They just took them over. Hitler created the National Socialist Factory Cells Organization, NSBO, and banned all independent unions. And then he goes on to say, Hitler was smart enough to know that blatant power grabs went down much easier with the public when they were shrouded in language like free unions. It's sort of like when we hear a proposal to leave no child behind. Who could be against that, right? This is Tom Hartman. Thank you very much for being with us today. Join us next week, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal!
Anaconda! Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network. All right, boys, come on.